Sorry, Sarah. Sarah did second that motion. I apologize for cutting you off.
I was just trying to help you.
Just trying to get moving, Sarah.
Just trying to get us going.
I'm sorry, I skipped over, in such a rush, I skipped over the invocation. We have, before we do that, I would like to, Minister, ask you to have, we have a moment of silence. Just recently, Russell Troutman just passed, and we had his ceremony this past week. Chief Raley gave a beautiful eulogy, so thank you. There were a number of other city folks there. But if we could do that. And with that, I will introduce Minister McDonald from the Flowers Temple Church of God in Christ to give our invocation. Chief White, Chief, if you wouldn't mind, just a 30-second observation in remembrance of...
Absolutely, Mayor.
Thank you.
If you all would join me in prayer, can we have a brief moment of silence for Russell Troutman? Russell was a great community advocate and assisted police officers, firefighters throughout his entire legal career, and he would be sorely missed in the community if we could have a moment of silence. Join me in prayer. Heavenly Father, we come today as a community looking for wisdom, seeking knowledge, looking to do your will. We ask that you watch over our proceedings today, watch over those who are participating, watch over our city employees who are out doing the work today in pretty dangerous weather right now. Ask you to be able to bring them home to their families at the end of their duty today. We ask this as we ask all things in your name.
Amen.
Amen.
Please, you may stand and recite the pledge with us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jerry, are you going to join me up here?
Yes, sir.
Please. I'm asking Jerry to join me, the director of our electric utility, at the podium to announce a recent service award. I'm saving you a lot these days. You just dropped the award.
Thanks, Jerry.
You get a little nervous when it starts raining this much, don't you?
We'll be all underground. We won't care about the rain, right?
Mr. Mayor, I'm happy to present to you the FMEA Community Service Award. You know, you won't hear a lot of excitement in my voice about this because we get it every year. But the reason that we get it, to me, is real important. And we talked a little bit about this at our 10th birthday celebration last week. Barry Maloney, the executive director of the FMEA, asked me what I thought our biggest accomplishment was. And it didn't take me but a second to say, I know what that is. It's local control. And that's really what this award is about. This award is about local control. We were cited for many of the things that we do in support of this community. Our solar project is one. Our support of the hot dogs for the 4th of July celebration is another. There are a lot of things you get to do with your local utility when it belongs to you. And that's really what this award is about. It's an award for making a difference in our community. And so I'm happy to present to you.
Great. Thank you so much. Can you stay with me, Chair? Great. Randy, can I turn this over to you?
Yeah.
And I'm
going to
come down. Oh, good. Good. As many of you know, we had our celebration of the 10th anniversary of our electric utility. It was June 1st, marked the 10th anniversary. We had a great party last week. We invited a lot of people back that helped make it happen. It is through the hard work and dedication of a number of people, but the guy that keeps and that has made such a huge difference in the daily operations and the strategic planning for that is standing right behind me, and the guy, that's this guy. And the guy that really helped push this thing through and get it done is standing right next to him. So the electric utility is a great asset for the city of Winter Park. And before, Jerry, you come up here, I want to thank both of you two for the work you did to bring it to fruition and to keeping it going. So thank you, guys. You've been great.
As the mayor indicated, we had a celebration last Monday night. Real important day, 10 years from the date we flipped the switch and went into the electric utility business. You know, when the campaign was going on for the referendum, there were folks that were in favor and supported the referendum, and there were folks that were not in favor. And in my mind, I was on the consulting team that did the evaluation. Those debates got a bit personal. You know, what are you going to do in a storm? Your rates are going to go up. Reliability is going to get worse. And so, you know, I've been involved in the municipal electric industry all my life, and so those things really went to my heart. And I'm happy to report to you, 10 years later, that I think we have been a raving success. And I had several things that I pointed out that I want to remind you. They said your rates would go up. If you were a residential customer, then we made the decision to stay on Duke for that whole 10-year period versus Winter Park, our rates, our customers paid 2.5% less than had they been on Duke. As of today, our rates are 12.2% below Duke. And so not only are we delivering great service at lower rates, we're also investing the profits that we make in the electric utility business and placing the wires underground. So they said the reliability is going to get worse. Well, at that point, we had our average customer was experiencing more than 200 minutes a year of outage. Today, that number is closer to 65. Our goal is 60, so we're not quite there, but we're way better than 200. Our customers at that point in time were experiencing about 22 momentary interruptions a year. We've got that number below one. And so, you know, we're working hard to deliver reliable service. The one that griped me the most, and it was my proudest moment, August 20 and 21st, 2008, Tropical Storm Fay stood right over this town and whipped our butts. We had 3,000 customers out of service Thursday night. That's 21% of our customers were out of service. When you call the outage number and 21% of your customers are out, you get a busy signal. And so we set about the business with the one man in the pickup truck, as Progress claimed at that point in time. And we put the system back together. By Friday night, most everybody was back in service. By noon on Saturday, everybody was back in service. And at that point in time, Duke still had over 12,000 customers out. So how do we do it? We do it just like you do, Progress Energy, but we do it better. We do it faster for the benefit of our citizens. So I think when you look at rates, you look at undergrounding, we expect to have the balance of our overhead wires placed underground in the next 8 to 10 years. We're doing it at lower rates. We're doing it to improve reliability. And so I think, you know, our team has proven to this community that we can do it better than the investor-owned utility that was here before us, and I'm very proud to report that, Mr. Mayor, at our 10th anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I have a little proclamation to read, Jerry. I wanted you to speak prior to this. This is the Electric Utility 10th Anniversary Month. Whereas in 2001, the franchise agreement with Progress Energy Florida expired, and the City Commission authorized a feasibility study in an effort to explore the possibility of acquiring the electric utility system. And whereas between 2001 and 2003, the city hosted many public meetings, faced many legal battles, and proceeded through arbitration to negotiate a purchase price. And whereas on May 29, 2003, the purchase price was set at $42.3 million, and a referendum date was set for September 9, 2003. And whereas the referendum passed with 69% voting in favor of the acquisition. Whereas on June 1, 2005, the city flipped the switch to official ownership of its electric utility. And whereas for the past 10 years, the city has experienced many successes, including decreased costs for operation and maintenance, improved reliability, customer service and aesthetics, increased property values, and approximately 60% of overhead lines currently underground. And whereas during this 10-year period, the city's electric rates have averaged 2.6% below Duke Energy's rates, and today are 12.2% below. And whereas in the next 10 years, the city's plan to underground the remaining 79 miles of overhead lines
work with homeowners to underground their individual service lines, and continue storm hardening efforts, protecting our system from inclement weather. Now, therefore, I, Steve Leary, by virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor of the city of Winter Park in the state of Florida, do hereby proclaim the month of June 2015 as Electric Utility 10th Anniversary Month in the city of Winter Park, Florida. Thank you, Jared.
I just want to real quickly say, you know, this was a difficult challenge, both leading up to the campaign as well as once we took it over. It was a lot of hard times. And when we brought Jerry on board a couple of years after we acquired the system is when things really turned around, and we started focusing more on how where the money was spent and everything, and turned it into a real profitable system. And without him, we would not be sitting here with the success we have today. So I just want to thank him for that. And mention everybody that when we get to the break, Jerry tried to talk until we got to the break. But when we get to the break, we have cake for everybody as a birthday celebration for the electric utility. So thank you.
Since I like to talk so much, I would like to say one more thing. Before I came to work for the city of Winter Park, I was an electric utility consultant active in the state of Florida. I personally was involved in over 12 municipalization evaluations in this state. None of the others did it. Winter Park did it. There's two reasons that Winter Park was able to pull it off. One, the leadership of Randy and I, which was huge, and the other was political courage by the city commission. So I just want you to know this is a really special community. It has great leadership, and it has great policymakers, and we're different in that regard.
Thank you. Do you want to do a picture of this? Chief White, would you join me up here? There you are. Thank you, buddy. In honor of Code Enforcement Officers Appreciation Week, I'd like to offer this proclamation. Code Enforcement Officers Appreciation Week, June 1st through the 5th, 2015. Whereas code enforcement officers provide for the safety, health, and welfare of the citizens in this community through the enforcement of building, zoning, housing, animal control, fire safety, environmental, and other codes and ordinances. And whereas code enforcement officers are often not credited for the jobs that they do in saving lives and improving neighborhoods. And whereas every day, assisted by support and program staff, they attempt to provide quality customer service to the public for the betterment of the community. And whereas too many times their efforts go unnoticed, even after code compliance has been accomplished due to their efforts and expertise. And whereas code compliance officers are dedicated, well-trained, and highly responsible individuals who take their job seriously and are proud of their department and the local government within which they serve. And whereas the Florida Association of Code Enforcement, FACE, has declared the first week of June be set aside by the local government to honor and recognize their code compliance officers. Now, therefore, I, Steve Leary, by virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor of the city of Winter Park in the state of Florida, do hereby proclaim the week of June 1st through the 5th, 2015, as Code Enforcement Officers Appreciation Week in the city of Winter Park, Florida. Folks, this is huge. These guys, hopefully you don't see them. Hopefully you don't read about them in the news. If you do, they miss something. The work they do goes unnoticed, and we're glad it goes unnoticed. I have personally dealt on a number of projects with them, and I will tell you, you hear complaints when people are being asked to be brought up to code. But again, the work they do is tremendously important in keeping us all safe. I think our emergency services group agrees with that. So, Chief, it's my pleasure to recognize this. Thank you.
Yeah, just a second. I'll try not to take as long as Jerry. Several years ago, I was called down to the city manager's office, and that hasn't happened too often in my 20-plus years working for the city. But and I tell people, well, Randy very rarely, you know, directs you, you know, to me, hey, I need you to do this. That day where he said, hey, I need you to take code enforcement, you know, my first question was, what did I do wrong? And then I said, what did they do wrong? And he said, no, it's what you're doing right, and it's what they're doing right. And the words you mentioned from the proclamation was exactly that. I had no idea how in-depth the work that they do, and how involved it is. You know, it's been amazing the last couple of years learning everything that is involved with that and learning the dedication of these employees that led by Sylvia Hawkins that really has, over the many, many years, I think really brought the visual aspect of Winter Park to life. You know, you pass the ordinances, but somebody has to go out there and make sure they understand it and then get compliance with it. And we try to deal with problems every day and try to catch them before they get either to your level or my level. But these officers are out every day doing that job. So very, very much appreciated. Very much appreciated the opportunity, Randy, to lead this group. And thank you very much.
Can we get a picture
of question? Yeah. Let's bring them. Let's get it. She's going to tell us. We're all balanced. I think we're over here.
Yeah, I was going to say, everybody in the back is over here.
Ship, sure. I'm here.
You guys are good.
You can't see the camera, no?
All right.
Okay, is everybody ready? One, two, three. And again. One, two, three.
Oh my gosh, how we love you. Thank you so much.
If I could, for just 1 second while you're getting everything rearranged, I did wanted to mention that I didn't get a chance the other night with Jerry and the electric utility. One of the things that gets left out when you talk about the successes of local control of electric utility, and we've had these conversations, is the benefits that it's brought to my emergency responders, my firefighters. We used to sit on days like this for hours waiting for somebody to come to take care of a down line. Now it's minutes. And that puts my firefighters back in service, able to help and respond to other calls. And that's something that kind of goes unspoken. But that alone, we've watched that statistic over the last couple of years. It's huge to our response time. So thank you, Jerry. Thank you for the guys that are out there doing the job on your end. So just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Chief. Folks, a few weeks ago we took action to look for, I think it was two at the time, maybe three additional representatives to the visioning committee?
Two.
And it looks like Dory's bringing forward the last appointee. This should round out our entire visioning group, correct, Dory? Deborah Ousley will be representing Orwin Manor. Do we need a motion and a second?
Move to approve.
No, I'll second.
Great. Penny, do I need to open the floor up on this? I don't believe we did on the other appointees. That's correct. Great. I will. I'll call that to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Fantastic. Please thank Deborah for us. And the Fire Pension Board. Again, I believe Trey was brought forth already, but maybe he had to be officially brought forward by the Fire Department. Is that correct, Cindy? Great. So I'll look for a motion to approve Trey.
So moved.
A second?
A second.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Fantastic. Great. Hey, guys, you know, one thing I wanted to bring back up just for discussion purposes, and I had a quick conversation with the city attorney prior to this to make sure this was okay to do. I wanted to talk about the Historic Preservation Board because we do have two MPB seats on that. We have a responsibility to this community, as directed by the charter, to appoint people to these advisory boards. You know, I'm kind of at a loss as to what to do because, to be quite honest, I think four of us at the time said the appointees that I brought forward were qualified, capable people, and I know Commissioner Seidel did not have a chance at the time to meet with them. So I'm wondering, if did you have a chance to speak and meet with these two individuals?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did. And I've been talking to a whole lot of folks. But
yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you've gotten a ton of emails. I don't know. Was your impression similar to ours that they're capable, qualified people? May I ask you that?
Yeah, I certainly, you know, they're both great folks, and I think with the issue I think we're looking at with historic preservation is, you know, what's the real function of the board with regards to the property rights issue versus historic preservation issue.
Okay.
And so it was more of trying to figure out that, you know, what ultimately are we doing about the city to help with the character of the city, which was a lot of what the campaigning was about. And so I'm trying to look at it from the perspective of, you know, there hasn't really been too much to do about the current rules, but there has been a lot about the proposed rules, if you will. And then so if, with the proposed rules, if it's going to be more strict, then to have some balance on the Historic Preservation Board makes some sense. But if there's not rules that are in place that are more strict, then, you know, that's where I'm kind of looking at it from the big picture, Mr. Mayor, as far as ultimately, you know, what can we do to help with, you know, saving the character of the city with regards to some of the development that some people think is okay and some people don't. So it's a very, I'll call it kind of nebulous place where some people have a strong opinion on one side and some on the other. And so my concern is that they're both fine men. I've talked with both of them. I actually talked to Phil about he's coming before the board with the item on his lot split. And it's just getting a general comfort, and I'm not quite sure that personally I'm there yet that this is the right thing for the Historic Preservation Board, and I'd like to get there. And and having some more conversations with some folks, as I think some I can get there if we have some things that I understand kind of what they're trying to achieve. And, you know, there's different opinions on things, and so that's what I'm trying to work through is how do you balance those opinions and how do we do it in an appropriate way. But as far as personally, I think they're both great folks, and they're both dedicated folks.
Well, I think, you know, Mr. Cooper, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just kind of wanted to take us back to where I had started at the last meeting.
Sure.
And that was the fact that I think we all agree that we would like to qualify for grant funds. And to qualify for grant funds, we need to be a certified local government.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem isn't about people. My problem is I would like to see, and I've asked staff for this, I'd like to see a list of what the criteria is for membership for us to become a certified local government. Then what slots out of that list are already taken care of by the existing board members, and then what skill sets are we missing in order to qualify?
Mm-hmm.
And then if we could get a slate that met those qualifications, and quite frankly, out of the three, I think one did, and maybe two didn't. And I'm not sure if we have an opportunity to put that together. I know I personally will feel more comfortable. And if the commission could set a date by which the ordinance will definitely be coming to the city commission. I went back through the minutes, and it looked like it was approved by the board in February. And if that's
what
true,
was approved?
It looked like the minutes were missing. We need to know from February on, March on.
We didn't
look
approve
like
any.
No. The ordinance was approved by the Historic Preservation Board in February, is what the minutes said. So I'm trying to kind of get a handle on that.
Well, the Historic Preservation Board scheduled a public meeting, as you know.
I'm sorry, sir, but there weren't any minutes online past that date, and those were the last minutes that I read. So I apologize.
The Historic Preservation scheduled a public meeting, and then they heard from the public, and then they wanted it brought back to them to discuss what they heard from the public. They've scheduled a work session for June the 17th. I think in your packet I say it's at 9 a.m. It's been changed to 6 p.m. So they're going to have a work session to talk about what they heard at the public meeting. So it'll be coming back to the commission once they get back through the ordinance and make any changes that they feel necessary based upon what they heard.
And Commissioner, if I might, I think, please don't take offense to this. I think saying that we all want a CLG, and I don't know exactly what that all entails. We keep hearing it's for grants, but then from what I've read on it, and I've researched it, the grants are small and the grants can only be used for certain things. So I'm not sure if we want to upset the balance for that. So I think there are some assumptions being made here, and I think, and I know by the charter, we are supposed to make these appointments. And I can understand if there, and it sounds like Greg may have an issue. We've all said these are capable, qualified people because we've had much greater experience with both, to the two appointees that I've brought up. There's nothing in the charter, there's no provision in the charter saying you have to appoint people if you like the timing. If you don't like the timing, you don't have to appoint people. And that's where I'm getting hung up. We have two good people who can add to this process, who have the experience and the discipline. They're both very moderate people that can add to this process. And I don't think this commission is not doing what it is charged with by the charter if we do not appoint qualified people. We have said these are good, qualified, capable people, and we as a commission need to come together and appoint them so that we can get this off our plate and do our charter responsibilities.
Steve, I'm not there. I wasn't there. I was never part of this being an individual basis. I am still convinced that I would much rather have the existing commission finish their discussion on the ordinance, bring something to us. They certainly can. They are quite capable of doing that.
I'm sorry, we're not extending.
I'm not
extending those two people.
No, I'm not extending anybody. I'm saying who's on there right now. I don't care if it's 7, 4, 3, or 2. I am not ready to do that. And I appreciate it. I this is not a personal thing. This is trying to get the ordinance out of there and in front of us. And I said it the last time we had this discussion. If it doesn't come forward soon, I'll bring one forward. I mean, we've horsed with this long enough, and I don't want to do anything more to delay that process. I mean, I'm really on board of getting that thing. We're either going to, let's call the vote. I mean, we're either going to do it or not.
Commissioner Hammond.
And I'm not willing to wait months more to go through this process that we've been going through for the last 2 years.
Appreciate that, but
that's where I'm at.
We say it's not about the people.
It's not.
But you're saying we're good qualified people, and we're not appointing them to a process that we are charter defined to appoint people to. And that is my problem. There's no provision in this charter that says, unless you don't like the timing, then you can hold off. The charter directs us to appoint people.
It asks us to appoint people, and we've had numerous boards that have gone through the process of not having a full complement.
But that's not because we didn't offer up good qualified people who we all agree are good qualified people.
Told you where I stand on this, and that's where I stand on this. Until we get an ordinance, I'm not willing to horse with the existing commission as it is.
Well, I think you're horsing with the charter then, Commissioner.
Well, I think that
I'll run the risk of horsing with the charter to get something out of that commission.
Commissioner Sprinkle, yes, Commissioner Sprinkle.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you why I think this is where we are, okay? All of us have been involved in this, in fact, to the point that we all have personal feelings, and we've gone to the meetings of these boards, and we're learning all about it. And the reality of it is that board has not brought us anything. They've been bringing, they've been getting input, they've been out there, they've been working. And guess what? If we think that 3 or 4 members of that board are the only people who we can listen to, then we are really in trouble. Because the whole idea is that this has to have a lot of support from a lot of people. So to me, I think we're talking about something. When you said, Commissioner Seidel, that they're bringing this in front of us, we don't know what they're bringing in front of us because they haven't done it yet. So we've had all these meetings. No. Let me finish. Okay, so what I've seen and what I've heard is everybody trying to get what they want. Okay, and we're getting letters from people about what we're going to hear. We don't know yet what we're going to hear because it hasn't come to us. Now, when it comes to us, we're going to have some more rationale about that. I think we've got our jobs mixed up. We're talking about because some people really want something they've read to come in front of us, and so they're really pushing for that, and the fact they don't even want to change the people, because even though we give lip service up here that it's not about the people, it is about the people, and you know that, okay? So don't say it's not about the people, because that's not right. We know it's about the people. So if you can't say it's not about the people.
I could easily say it's not about the people, and I didn't appoint anybody on that.
You don't get to. You don't get to, Tom.
We do as a group.
No, not really. There's only one person who gets to it, and we approve them. And so
now, time out. There's a person that gets to recommend individuals to.
I think we're talking semantics.
Right.
Well, so let's just talk. And let's be clear, Commissioner. I'm sorry to interrupt. By the charter, I appoint. That is what the charter
says.
Right.
We approve.
So, Jesse, I just want to clarify the semantics, and you approve the appointments.
That's right.
Or disapprove the appointments. Absolutely. Or don't act on the appointments. So those are the three options that we have, and at the moment, I'm taking the don't act on the appointments.
I have a middle ground.
So they have a, let me.
Well, now you're acting on the appointments. You're denying.
I am, at the moment, I am, yes. If that's
you have
what
two
I
options,
have.
Yay or nay.
And at the moment, I'm naming them, and to the fact that the Historic Preservation Board is going to meet again on June 17th, I'll give them one more meeting, and I'm prepared to bring something forward, because I'm tired of this.
Yeah. Well, the role of this commission is not to write ordinances.
I can bring forth, if I want to bring something forth as an ordinance,
you
I
have three, you certainly can, sir.
Thank
Commissioner
you.
Seidel.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I mean, when I first brought this up a month ago now, because it's been
3 weeks.
Right. Was the, the issue to me is we all talk about the character of Winter Park. And I kind of look at this as, and this is what I've been telling people I've been talking to, is are we trying to use the historic preservation ordinance to help with the character of the city of Winter Park? Or is there something else that we can be doing to help with the character of the city of Winter Park, such as some planning zoning overlays and some other things like that? Because, you know, the one thing that most people are opposed to is when a house comes in that's built in the neighborhood, it's just out of character with that neighborhood. And it's how do we come up with a way where we can help historic preservation, which I kind of see as a separate issue than kind of this, the houses coming in, the new houses being built. It's like, what do we as a city want to say is historic, and how do we want to protect it? I don't agree that having neighborhoods vote, having a board vote, and having a commission vote is a way to save the houses that we feel are important, because again, we're pitting neighbor against neighbor as you go through this process. And so where I'm at is I'm trying to use this situation to try and sort out a way that we can do something to help with saving the character, as well as not make people feel that their rights have been trampled. I'm trying to find some middle ground here, and that's where the Historic Preservation Board appointments, to me, it's not personal, but it's kind of things driving the issue. And so for me, it's kind of, we're not doing really anything at the moment. And, you know, you just became the mayor. I look forward to hear your thoughts and ideas on the things that we can be doing. And so that's where I'm at with it. And you know, I want to have more conversation. And it's certainly, like I said, it's something that I think we all care about the city. And I don't want this to become a debate amongst us, if you will. And I want it to be that we're all working together to figure out what we all want to do, which is come up with some ideas that can help the city. And that's, to me, it seems like the historical preservation ordinance, even if they pass, it doesn't really do much more than what we're doing today. And do we need to be doing more than we're doing today? So it's kind of that issue is being debated, but it's ultimately what's the best thing for us to do. And you know, the current ordinance, I wouldn't like to have the neighborhoods voting on this stuff. I'd like that we could kind of figure out what should be in the ordinance that is palatable for everybody. All the folks that don't like what's currently in there, let us know what it is. How can we adjust it so you do like it? And then just kind of, you know, pass something. And
Commissioner, I hate to interrupt, but you are making my point for me. I don't believe that ordinance is where it needs to be. I believe that thing is, I believe it's in a couple of different areas and possibly not exactly even what we charged that board with. And I think adding a couple new voices to it, say, hey, have you thought about it this way? That board is frustrated. They are, it's been a very tense environment. And I've heard from members of that board who are incredibly frustrated by it. And adding some new voices with some experience, one of the people that is no longer was a city commissioner. So I've appointed a county commissioner. Somebody with tremendous experience, who is a builder, who knows that game. There was an architect, an architect at ACI.
Right.
I'm replacing him with one of the most respected architects in the country, if not the world right now. So I have upgraded, and no offense to the previous members of that board. I've offered two great people to try to help facilitate that discussion in a great manner. And I think I'm as frustrated as Commissioner McMackin. But I think the way to get forward is add new people to come up with some new ideas. These are also two moderates who are known to work in a number of different areas across the aisle, and they can help facilitate this thing. That is my goal. Our goal and our responsibility is to approve good people and let them do their jobs, not to have it all done up here.
Right.
And that's why I'd like to get this off our plate, because what happens if they come forward and say, we're not ready yet. We need another 3 months. Another 3 months wasted. Why not put good people on there now and help work it out? So what happens if after the 17th meeting they're still not there? Tom's going to bring something forward, Commissioner McMackin?
You know, there's been, Stephen, we're all aware of it, there's been a I'll call it, for lack of a better term, a group of private citizens who have been working with the board
in
an attempt to do this. They have brought to them on several occasions an ordinance which this board has been attempting to tweak or approve. And personally, I'm quite prepared to take what that private group of citizens has presented as an ordinance and bring it before this commission and let's up and down it. I mean, three more months we've had a group of people working on this, both as a board and both a private group of citizens, who is also a very diverse and respected group of folks. We all know who they are, and we all know what they've done. And I'm saying, there's the ordinance that I would bring forward. And if they can't, I'm sorry?
But see,
I don't want to spend three more months going through this. I really don't. We've got one to vote on if we want to. And if they can't bring that forward after June 17th, I'm prepared to see if there's three commissioners up here that are willing to do that. And if not, then we'll send it back and we'll appoint people then and start the process over again, Steve.
Commissioner, I will tell you this. That ordinance does not meet what we asked them to do. And if you go back and look at what we charged them with, that does not meet what we asked them to do. So that is not ready. That still has to go to P&Z. That still has to go in front of the EDAB board. There's nothing in there.
Why does it have to go?
That's what we charge them with. If you were talking about changing the ordinance, it needs to go in front of P&Z to get their recommendations on it. And if you were talking about incentivization, which we asked them to look into, which is not included in the current ordinance, but it should be because we asked them to apply that, then that needs to go to EDAB.
I haven't seen it.
So I'm telling you,
If they need to have something up here. Well, part of that is you said you appoint good people and you tell them to go do the work. Now, whether we charge them to do something or not, if they felt that things needed to be changes as good people, they made changes. So part of that is they've done their job by doing whatever they're doing. But on the consequence, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of all that's going on. We owe it to people to either up or down this thing. If they got to go back and start all over again, then they got to go back and start all over again. But spending another year trying to get to that point of starting all over again is not worth it. There's too much animosity about this, too much misinformation. I want to call the question. That's my whole purpose behind all of this. I don't know what they're going to bring forward, but I'm tired of waiting for it.
I believe as a commission, it is perfectly within our authority to direct the board to bring their best product forward to us by a specific date. And on that specific date, I would be happy to vote to add members of the board. I see no reason why we can't pick a date and say, we do it all the time. We sunset things, we give people dates, we extend the dates. I see no reason why we cannot direct the board and make a motion to do so. I think we should talk about what date is good, and I think we should make a motion to direct that board to bring us their best product by a specific date. And if I can get anybody that thinks that's not a bad idea, I'll be happy to make that motion. But we need to move forward. I agree with that. We need to move forward. But I also believe we're talking about putting qualified people on the board, and there's no doubt that there are hundreds of qualified people who would like to be on that board. My personal objective is to make sure that whoever we select satisfies the requirements for a certified local government so that we will be eligible for the grant funds to do inventories and education on historic preservation. And that's my personal objective. So when you say to me, is it about people? Absolutely, it's about the skill sets of the people coming forward. And I would like to see a date by which the ordinance comes forward and a date on which we elect new people to that board.
Commission, just to hopefully add a little context to this, too.
Can I just find out if anybody else is interested at all in setting a date? Is that something that people are opposed to?
I'm certainly interested in that.
You would be okay with that? Is anybody else? I know it takes three to be interested.
I will tell you why I'm not, because we don't know where it stands. So to have to throw out an artificial date, it's like kind of saying somebody's
putting... It's not artificial.
No, it is an artificial date because we don't know where they stand. But we don't know where they stand. Are they, do they believe they are... You know, they just need to put the doors on the car? Or after what I heard, I mean, I was surprised that I got an email from the vice chairman of that board.
Saying it's ready.
Who said it's ready, but that was before they even took into account the public input. And I think that's absurd that we ask for public input, but then we have the board saying, yeah, we haven't really gone through that yet, but we're going to bring it forward anyway.
Well, I'll tell you. Certainly from my experience with Lockheed, when we got to that position, mm-hmm. they locked us in the room and they said, go work it out. This is your deadline. Stay together, work it out. And people will do that. I believe that board is committed. I think they just need to hear from us that we are ready for them to bring it forward.
Well, I don't think they're ready, and I don't believe that the citizens are ready based on the comments that came out of that last meeting, based on the emails I've been getting, and based on a number of things.
So your desire is to have the ordinance come forward at what point in time?
When they feel it meets what we charge them with, which is...
So when the majority votes on that commission to bring it forward?
No, I think when the majority takes the public input, when the board takes the public input and addresses the public input and not just pays it lip service and makes some changes that were suggested, and I feel were probably good changes, and brings forward what we asked them to bring forward. Included in there, such as incentives. And when it goes in front of P&Z and when it goes in front of EDAP to review the possible zoning changes and to review the incentivization that they're talking about, that's what those two boards are set up to do, is review that stuff. Then I feel that once they bring it to those boards and those boards kick it back to them to address their comments, then possibly it's ready for us. But I think that's months away. I don't see any rush to bring this forward. As Commissioner McMackin said, it's been 2 years now. I'd like to see it in front of us, but if it's not there, it's not there.
Another option would be for the City Commission to decide that this is a zoning issue and go through the zoning process for historic preservation. I mean, that's another option that they're not even considering, to my knowledge.
No, I don't believe that's under consideration, or I believe that's proper. Commissioner Sprinkle.
So my issue is that we have a process in place with boards, and if we decide up here that we don't like what that board did, then that's a whole different issue than us for me to sit here and say, okay, board, you're not acting quick enough. That's not what I think my job is. I mean, I might think my job is to hear them when they bring something to me. And so I feel like we are lessening what we've asked boards to do if we decide that we're going to act anyway no matter what they do. And I just don't like the feel or the tone or any of that, because to me, the board is doing their job. The fact that they're struggling tells us that this is a struggle. It doesn't tell us that people don't love this community and want it to be all it can be. It tells us it's not easy. It tells us it's a struggle for lots of people. And so for us, we've asked the board to deal with that first, and they're struggling, just like we're struggling. But they need to bring us whatever they bring us before I can get out there and tell you it's good, bad, right, wrong, or how I'm going to vote. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I agree, Commissioner. I think adding two great members of our community to that board will assist. And I also think, again, it is what the charter charges us to do. And to simply say, I don't like the timing, I'm sorry, folks. That's not reason enough to go against what the charter's defined our responsibilities to be. So it doesn't look like I have three votes for my two appointees, so I'm not going to bring those forward. But again, as has been set up here, they're good qualified people, so I'm not sure I can bring anybody forward right now. Honestly, I have four people there's four of us who know them and say they're good qualified people, and if good qualified people can't get through the process, I don't know who can. I'll say one other thing. You know, I heard this week in a great African proverb that you can go quickly alone or you can go far together. We're trying to go far, and we do that with good people, and I want to do that with all of you, and part of that is bringing good people to serve on our boards. With that, I will move forward. Thank you for the time. And while this will probably get reported as a very heated discussion, I do appreciate the passion and the input from all of you. So thank you.
And we appreciate that, too. I would ask in the future, though, that we include this on the agenda.
Certainly, Commissioner. That was a last-minute decision I made, and I checked with the city attorney if it was all right to discuss. So I definitely appreciate that, and that will happen. City manager's report. Randy.
Just a reminder that at your next meeting, the library task force will be bringing forward its report, and as soon as I have that report, I'll go ahead and forward it to the city commission.
Okay.
With that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for the city manager? Vice Mayor Sprinkle.
So I have another question about boards, because this has been an issue for me, and I know that Commissioner Cooper brought it up once before, too, and I kind of see it, because one of the reasons we're in this pickle, so to speak, is because when he brought 49 names in front of us, we pulled a few names off and decided to deal with them separately for one board. I'm wondering what we do in our city to make sure the boards know what their role is and what their place is and that they're advisory only, because something else came up from another board about wanting to make recommendations to us about how we spent their money, and I was thinking, your money? Where did you get this money? And so I'm a little concerned about how boards see their role. I don't know what you do or what is done in the town, in the city for that. But even with budget recommendations as to how money is spent and things like that, I'm a little concerned when I see boards starting to go a little rogue on some of those things. And I just want to make sure we have that under some kind of control.
I think Commissioner Sprinkle brings up a good point. We have probably all got that email from that board, and perhaps it is a review, and perhaps it's staff liaison to say we want to make sure we keep everybody focused. Sometimes up here we get, we kind of go down a path, and hopefully somebody pulls us back in. Is that something we can do? Have a board review with each individual board just to make sure.
Sure. We do have board orientation for the new appointees. In fact, it's Thursday night, I think, is this week, is the board orientation for the new ones. Okay. And we do talk in there about the role of an advisory board and those that are quasi-judicial and that type of thing. But your point is valid. Michelle and Peter have been going to all of the advisory boards doing a dog and pony show on how the budget process works. So hopefully that'll help to some degree. But they are advisory, and they will from time to time give you advice, on how the, whichever board, just pick
right.
one.
That, sure. That, don't pick one, because I may. And I know you don't mean to.
So the employee picnic board that doesn't exist would come and advise you, hey, we'd rather have steak instead of chicken.
Right.
And so, you're going to get advice on their area of expertise, even when you didn't ask them to look at something in particular.
Right.
For example, you haven't asked many of these boards for anything at all. They just go about their business working right. with their staff liaison, and from time to time they'll vote to pass forward advice to you. And I think that's what this was, is they took it upon themselves to be unhappy with something I did last year with the commission, something I presented, and they took it upon themselves to say, we don't like that. We're going to advise the commission that you shouldn't do it that way.
It may have come across that
they felt it was their money, but I think all they're really saying is, you've challenged us to be your advisors over this issue, and this is our advice. Don't touch our money.
But Commissioner McMaster.
Randy, what about... I know that we have, in fact, we talked about it when we were at the CRA, that we have it from time to time, either for task force or for boards, allocated funds for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was to, have a study, or we're going to potentially do something with
right. help
on a design or whatever it might be. Does board expenditure of funds have to come back to the commission for approval? For the hiring of a consultant or
yes.
whatever to help them.
They have no spending authority. The boards have no spending authority on their own.
So they would, any...
But you can approve now, Randy?
Yeah, for example, if a board said, you know, we're looking at this piece of property, we'd like to have an appraisal, and I can get that done for $3,000, I have that in my spending authority. If I think it's something that furthers the mission of the city, I can go ahead and approve that.
Right.
But if somebody wanted to do a, you know, a $50,000 study, I would probably, I mean, that's, you know, it just depends on what the level
and
of it is.
I'm looking at it as more of hiring a consultant to, you know, provide design input. Or, I mean, there are things that, you know, there's, yes, we need, you know, that's germane to a specific question, is we're looking at a piece of property and we need something, but to hire a consultant to come in and say we're looking at redesigning something or doing whatever, that goes beyond just, would that still have to come back to the board, or you were authorized under that to...
It's going to depend on the dollar amount.
Okay.
And then
the total dollar.
And then
it's driven on that. Right. And I think we don't have
that's a qualifier.
75.
But if it's less than that, even if I don't feel like it's something the commission would want to see done, or I have a question in my mind about whether you'd want to see it done, I would bring that to you. It really, if they're working on something that I know we're all heading that same direction, and I think it furthers the cause, I would approve it.
Commissioner Cooper.
Different subject. Do you want to talk
just about the boards? If you recall, the boards gave us their evaluation of their board work.
Yes.
And one of the things they said to me when I read all of those evaluations was, I don't really know what the city commission wants me to do. That was what I heard loud and clear time after time, because there was a question about that. So I would like for us, so I'm going to go one step further and say, I'd like us to put something in place that enables us to at least have the opportunity for the boards to know a little more about what we're asking them to do and what we see. Because I think the reason this city works as well as it does is not just you and our great staff, but that we have all these boards.
Right.
And yet, I also think we don't have an opportunity up here to do much with them. So I'd like to see something be put in place that would enable us to do that.
I think that's a good idea. Randy, just touching back on the previous subject in relation to this, I think it's also we asked a board that's not necessarily, I would feel more comfortable asking P&Z to write an ordinance. I'm not sure the Historic Preservation Board is truly set up to be a ordinance writing board. They are, you know what I mean? I don't think that, and no offense to them, that's just not their skill set. And maybe that's, I think we have to be very careful what we charge boards with, and perhaps setting up that ad hoc committee, as it's come to be known, was probably in recognition of that. But maybe they're getting bogged down, because that's truly not what they're set up to do, is write an ordinance. And that's, you know, they're there to implement and enforce and provide recommendations and those things, but not really to write an ordinance. So just a thought as we come off of those 2 points. Commissioner Cooper?
Yes, I have a question regarding the right-of-way on the rails. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm sure everybody
is... I saw that item on that issue, on the board issue. Are you switching?
Oh,
the
no, go ahead. Sure, go ahead,
Commissioner.
I do want to say, Commissioner Sprinkle, with regards to the money and the spending, on my time on the board, they would come to us and look for us to approve bonds, large bonds, and spending for certain items. So there is some spending associated with it.
I would disagree. They were looking for you to recommend to the commission whether or not to issue bonds and that type of thing. As a board, you didn't have the authority to issue bonds.
But they were looking for the board's support to say we agree that these
bonds
are kind of good things.
Yep.
And so I guess I would kind of look at that as something where they felt, well, if you're asking for our support on things, if there's something we don't support, we should let them know also.
Absolutely.
And so that's where it's just kind of, you know. But I do, you know, our boards, to me, they are extremely important in that, you know, the idea of, you know, they're citizens also. So if they have a comment on something, it's good to get those comments together.
Yep. Commissioner Cooper.
Absolutely. And in fact, I personally very much appreciate hearing from the boards. But I do think that it would be good if we as a commission could agree on specific things that we would like for them to look at or to focus on. Not in a limiting way, but just in a sense of a northern star. I wanted to talk to you a little bit. I've received numerous phone calls and emails regarding the fact that we have some old leases with CSX for areas along the right-of-way, and we've recently had a small business go forward and get yet another lease with the new group relative to the right-of-way. And there are a lot of people who are very interested in a bike path and a bike trail along the right-of-way, and I'm hoping that we can accommodate both of those things. But the concern is, and the question is, should we let the Department of Transportation officially know? I know that we talked to them when we lobbied, but should we as a board consider letting them know that we would like the city to have the first option to any right-of-way leases that they might be getting ready to negotiate? Because unfortunately, while we are talking about we'd like to have it, lobbying that we'd like to have it, there are small businesses along the way that may indeed be lobbying harder or hiring attorneys or in some way also seeking that same right-of-way. And hopefully there's two sides of the track, and we can put parking on one and maybe consider the possibility of a trail on the other. But the question is anyone else on the commission interested in asking our pedestrian and bike board to give us some guidance as to whether that fits in with the current plans for trails? And if it does, then we could decide whether we should pursue some more formal relationship with DOT.
I will just say, because I've been on the receiving end of this, I would be very wary of this commission getting involved with someone's political gamesmanship in an attempt to discredit some people.
I honestly don't think that's what it is, Mayor. That's the reason I said I think we can accommodate both. Well, I think Maitland is involved already. At least I've been told that Maitland is involved in pursuing that, and that Orlando has some involvement.
And you're going to have to be real clear with me. Are you saying that there's people out there that want us to have pedestrian right-of-way that we will purchase from them for bypass?
Right-of-way along the...
Yes.
I'm sorry, I've never heard this. Help me because I didn't go up to town. I missed the trip for personal reasons last. We didn't bring this up. No, but can I jump in for a second?
I was under the impression that acquiring excess right-of-way from the railroad has been one of our legislative priorities for quite some time. And that the last time I, last year when I went up, we met with, I mean.
Sure, we've been trying to do that.
Well, I know, and I don't know what else we could potentially do besides.
We could request first right of refusal so that
I'm under the impression that that is what we've been, and maybe I'm totally wrong, but I was under the impression that we were attempting to acquire additional right. I mean, tell me if I'm, wrong. And I thought that was one of our anyways, we might, forget.
We
had else.
Yeah, please, because this is not.
No, I'm coming.
There are many small businesses that have that same situation. So this is not about that. This is about saying there's two sides of the track. We have this legislative priority. Maybe make it more formal.
Sure, Commissioner Micah.
And Mr. Mayor, what got me in way back when is when we talked about the fact that currently the right-of-way for the CSX goes a third of the way through Central Park.
Right.
And when I was out there, when they put the stakes out there originally, and I think most citizens would be scared to realize how much of that park they actually own. So that, to me, was the impetus for
it is
that. So that's where I'm coming from, is that I thought we were
pursuing that.
Trying
yes,
to do that. Now, regardless, I mean, bike trails or leases or anything else, we are still trying to do
yes.
that, correct?
Yes,
okay,
we are.
Good. Then
yes.
I'm happy camper. Thank you.
And there's a separate, there's something else. A separate group who is, it's very obvious, and it's got nothing to do with biking, and it's got nothing to do with pedestrian, and it's got nothing to do with anything except an attempt to personally affront an individual property owner. And I wish that you and I could talk offline and I could tell you all about it.
But it's
gotten to the point where people at the FDOT are saying, who is this person calling me?
they need help.
Okay.
And it is.
I'm on Central Park.
So as far as
Central Park, we're still pursuing.
Yes, what we started 2 years ago, yes. We tried to do.
Yes.
We are continuing.
Okay.
We are continuing with that.
And my question is, should we make that more formal and send a request for
first? We are working.
I'm sorry, I haven't seen that.
There's just a lot that goes into it, and there's manners to go about it, and we're trying to work on the best strategy to get that quote. Okay. Mr. Seidel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As a person who's actually managed trail studies, and I call myself somewhat of a pro trail person, we looked along the railroad tracks through a city that were abandoned, so they weren't live. But one of the things when I did hear about this that, I have not looked at our detailed bike and trail plan. I've heard people say we've had one since 1995. We haven't really done anything with it. That is, if we are serious about doing something with it, then the idea of just having, not necessarily the first right of refusal if a private property owner is looking at some tracks, that would be an alignment that we've looked at and that we know where we want this to go. And I don't know where those are, but that's one of the big things we did is we then, the city adopted an ordinance and said any development coming through here, and a lot of them were subdivisions that want the trail to go through it. So there's two sides to it, and there's many routes you can do on trails. You can put trails on streets. You don't have to have a separate. If you have a low traffic street, you can do that. So that's where I was looking at it from. If we have the ability as the city to say whether we have some need for it or not, that
it's not abandoned.
Yeah, so
it's not abandoned. So let's start there.
Right,
and there has to be the desire, and there has to be the ability. For the governmental entities that control that at each level to sign off on that, and a lot of people aren't comfortable having that near tracks. So again, we're trying to work through the process, but this thing that's come up lately has nothing to do with that, and it's got nothing to do with anybody who's ever been interested in biking before.
Well, my question was just should we ask for some advice from our pedestrian and bicycle advisory board? That was my specific question.
I think the first goal would be to try to see if we can acquire rights to it and work out some type of partnership and some kind of agreement, and then possibly what do we do with it is probably the next step, and I would take that advice, Commissioner, and I agree with you.
And that board has brought us a plan, and we have it,
and it's
a very good plan. It has nothing to do with railroads, by the way, and that plan is where they're working, and I think we work the plan until they bring us another one.
I just don't want to get distracted by one person's bugaboo. Okay. Any other questions for the city manager?
Steve, I've got a real quick one.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry.
our breakfast meeting was so informal.
That we had. It was great.
Thank you for doing that. No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Randy, as I left the 10th anniversary celebration last week from the electric company after Jerry finished speaking, I was...
Jay, you're catching a hard time.
That's part of the sale. I was on Harper getting ready to turn left on the Morris, and the construction fence up along the prop where the hotel is, where the new development is going.
Along Morris?
Yeah, they've got the construction fence up, and it's on the right of way, and it comes, we've got a very narrow right, it's back a sidewalk. And turning left off of Harper onto Morris, you've got to pull
out a little bit,
way out in front of that to where you're almost, your nose is sticking in the lane. And I just wonder, we may want to look at that and request that be pulled back a bit so you've got a line of sight there. But that was
good. I turn right there all the time. It's the same problem when you turn right. You have to get way out. Saw it today.
Yeah, the fence is the fence. I'm fine with that. But if we could have someone take a look at that, I think that would.
Thank you.
And that's all I have, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thanks. City Attorney's report.
Larry. Yes. Very briefly, at the last commission meeting, there was a conditional use approval for Fifth Third Bank. I wanted to give you a quick status of that. The commission included language that there be a condition that the city attorney must ensure a means for resolution of the easement negotiations if the parties cannot agree as to what is reasonable under the circumstances. So I'm putting together a development agreement. I sent out language that I believe would assure a reasonable means for resolution, and that relates to the adjoining parcel owned by the Helsbys, you know, Matsby Properties. And I understand, unless the commission wants to clarify, that the commission is not interested in this being a public easement or a public right-of-way, and there's going to be a limit to how much you want to be involved. And so the initial response from Fifth Third Bank is that they're going to stand with their language. Then I shared within the minutes that did explain that the city attorney is to assure a reasonable means for resolving if the parties can't agree. And so they're reconsidering that. Meanwhile, the Helsbys have a lawyer, Jeff Johns. We're all going to get together, and hopefully we'll, by the next cycle of meetings, we'll be able to get a development agreement that everyone's satisfied with. I'm assuming, unless I'm told further, that the commission doesn't want that condition that the attorney for Fifth Third proposed to be illusory. I mean, you know, in other words, it's tied to commercially reasonable discretion of Fifth Third Bank.
Right.
I mean, one of the things that is an aspect of commercially reasonable discretion of a property owner is you don't have to sell. So I'm assuming the commission wants a private cross-access agreement to be worked out, if possible, and that if not, there's going to be some procedure for the parties, probably to have.
Larry, I think the sticking that the item there was reasonableness.
Yes.
I think that's where everybody's getting hung up, and that's where we are asking for your expertise to try to get some language in there to help quantify reasonableness.
Yes, sir. What I've done is I've put in language that the bank initially rejected, but I think now that they see the minutes did include a reasonable means for assuring a resolution process, they're willing to meet with me and the attorney for the Helsbys. I'm going to suggest the declaratory judgment process. The city's not involved in that. That's up to the Helsbys. And basically, the reasonable means would have to be tied, or the reasonable discretion of Fifth Third would have to be tied to the price that they're going to charge. And they have a right to charge for it, maintenance and expenses of maintaining the cross access, and things of that nature. I tried to put a little definitiveness that it couldn't be merely Fifth Third saying, I tell you what, we're not interested in selling, but if you really push us, we'll sell it to you for some, you know, astronomical price that's not market based. So that's kind of the discussion. I wanted to let you know where that's at.
Okay.
I've told Mr. Wiggins that my view is that without a development agreement, the CU shouldn't get permits yet. That, you know, that'll keep everyone working, you know, assiduously to try to bring this in. Any questions? Otherwise, that's the status.
Mr. Sedgwick.
Yeah, just to disclose, I did call Arthur Baker, the attorney, just to kind of follow up and ask him if he thought everything went, you know, how he thought it went. And he seemed generally pleased and that we're, you know, working through these things. I mean, I just, you know, he talked to me quite a bit, so I went, and, you know, they seemed very reasonable in what they're trying to do. So I was very pleased with all that, and just, I'm just letting you know I talked to him.
Thank you.
I appreciate
it. If I
needed to or not.
And he's a real gentleman to work with. I think it's going to be fine. I just want to give you that status. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Oh, Commissioner Sprinkle.
I think we had a two-year clause in there.
There's 2 years.
There's a two-year clause.
I'm
so
not proposing to change.
Okay.
That.
Just wanted to make sure.
Because I understand from the bank's perspective, I mean, they're looking at...
They're not going to wait forever.
Right. There's no development plan for the Helsby property.
Right.
And they
right.
have some reasonable need to see what that plan is.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. Jeff, the non-action items, we have the parking garage discussion.
Yes, some time ago, the commission asked the staff to start working on some parking garage design standards. And so we have some concepts that we're going to take you through if we can get to the PowerPoint. And the reason that we are doing these, let's see if I can figure out this clicker. Is because we always hear from folks saying they want parking garages to look like SunTrust. Obviously quality manners, and if we rely just on cost, we're not going to get parking garages that look, you know, the way that we want them in the city. And we have just been doing these approvals as we've had them, case by case, figuring out in each instance, does this look good enough, really, without any standards. And no standards for us, there's no standards for the developers either. SunTrust across the street is the gold standard of parking garages. I have heard so many land use lawyers complain to me that they wish we had never approved that because everywhere they go with other clients, other cities, they say, we want ours to look just like SunTrust. So, you know, there is a lot of architectural detail and interest in that garage. That's what we're trying to replicate. That's the gold standard. We have done some good jobs elsewhere, because here's some pictures of the Winter Park Towers garage. And if you look at those facades with the planter boxes, with the windows that actually look like windows, and some of the other architectural detail, articulation, and the colors, and when you look at that structure, it really comes off as a quality product as well. And again, the reason we're doing this is so that we don't have products like these pictures that are very cost efficient for the developers, or the top one on the right, which is what you see when you're going down I-4 as you pass Princeton. Obviously, these would never be approved by the City Commission, but without standards, we could be debating whether they could or not. There are garages out there that are done in a very cost-effective manner. This is the backside of the Paseo Apartments, and you'll see nothing but wires across the openings. Very simplistic design, and this is really what the developers would bring us, depending on the case-by-case situations. What it comes down to is a number of factors. Those kind of decisions depend on the location of the garage, architectural compatibility with what's around it on the property. Landscape screening is incredibly important to get where we want to get. And then what do we cover the facades with? They're just precast concrete, so what kind of lipstick do we put on them to make them look nicer? What do we do about the openings? Can we make them look like windows? And then, of course, articulation, ins and outs, and color composition. So location, critically important, because it determines what we can do about landscaping, what we need to do about design. And back to Paseo, the reason why that simple design worked and works very nicely on that site is because the parking garage is in the back corner. You can't see it from Canton. You really can't see it from Denning. And it has beautiful landscape screening in front of it. So location is a key factor in terms of how much you want to make someone do in terms of other design attributes to the garage. Architectural compatibility, we talk about it. It obviously depends on the setting. And the perfect example of doing it right is the Bank of America parking garage. You can barely tell that the parking garage on the right in the top picture is not the same as the building to the left. It fits in perfectly in terms of letting folks look at a building and really not know it's a parking garage if it weren't for the openings at the bottom. Here's another one of the Steelhouse Apartments that's just north of Colonial on Orange. And the bottom picture on the right is the apartment building, and you see a lot of architectural interest and design that's gone into the parking garage again to make it not look like a parking garage. And so architectural compatibility is one of the important elements. Landscape screening, I told you, it's critically important. It's what's happening at the ground. It's what is happening up above in terms of palms and trees. It's what's happening on the side of the garage in terms of our successful planter boxes. And here's some pictures. The top left is the parking garage at Morse in Pennsylvania behind Mike Mayer's law firm. And you don't really know it's there because those oak trees have grown up and completely hide it. It's not much of a garage, but with the screening, you don't know. And of course, bottom left is the project I just showed you from down in Orlando, beautiful landscape screening. And then on the right is what's just been put in to try to do the same thing at the Winter Park Hospital. Again, gold standard is SunTrust in terms of the landscape screening that we have there. And Paseo, what they have done there as well on the exterior. So we can get halfway home in most times by the landscape screening alone. But you also have to do architectural interest on those precast panels. You can't just rely upon paint. You have to have some different architectural skin on it. as well as the elements of the expression lines and the cornice at the top. And here's some pictures of some garages from out of town. You can see a lot of architectural interest in those different versions. And, of course, so does SunTrust on the bottom right. I have a lot of architectural interest. What you do with the openings also becomes critical to the success. Just keeping them open is the cheapest thing for the developers, but making them look like window elements, what you do in terms of the grates, the protections is important. Here's some pictures on the left of some garages out of town. The top left one looks just like windows. And the bottom left, well, they've really gone the extra mile in terms of the little balcony elements to try to convince you those are windows to a building and not a parking garage. And on the right-hand side, again, is SunTrust in terms of the planter boxes, the grates within the windows. The top two on the are the Hannibal Square parking garage. A lot of interesting grill work on those. Of course, the bottom two is the much more simplistic, little or nothing iron railings, wires across the openings. Articulation and color composition, you know, the ins and outs and a variety of the colors help it make look like a real building instead of a parking garage building. The top two are out of town, but you can see the ins and outs of the different colors, and the bottom two as well. You can do a lot just by moving things, and these are all applications on the side of precast panels. Lastly, there are other elements to a parking garage than just the exterior. What you do on the top in terms of lighting, awnings, what do the stair towers look like, and there can be opportunities for art as well. We do have it figured out in terms of lighting at the top. Between SunTrust on the left, Winter Park Hospital on the right, and we have figured out the height of the poles, how to hide them, and how to do it correctly. It's in our lighting code, but continuing that is one of the keys to success. There's interesting things other folks have done. You see the awning covers, I mean, the storm shutters sort of on the top picture, and then on the bottom picture, just some awnings on the ground level to make it almost look like a storefront instead of a parking garage. So we talked about this, showed this to P&Z. They were very receptive to these concepts in terms of moving forward to parking garages. They weren't quite as receptive about what happens inside. And so that's a whole other issue for us to talk about. Are we going to also try to control the environment inside as well as outside? We have talked about parking management plans before. It's important how these spaces are regulated. Obviously, signage is important. I mean, here's some pictures of, again, some garages from out of town where when you're inside, it is so lit up, so friendly, that it is a welcoming, safe environment. Unfortunately, those aren't the norm. Unfortunately, here's pictures of the Hannibal Square parking garage where you're inside in a dark cavern with guardrails and crossbeams, and you know, that really shouldn't be the welcome to Winter Park environment that we have. So to some degree, staff thinks that we should control some of the interior elements, as well as, lastly, what goes on top of the garage on the roof. The bottom right corner is the cheapest solution to do nothing. But we have had people go the extra mile. Top right is SunTrust, beautiful architecture stuff at the top of the stair tower. And the two on the left are at the Winter Park Hospital. Again, nice architecture on the top of that garage for your stair tower and elevator. So I have zipped right through that, trying not to be Jerry. And where we are is...
Jerry!
I wonder if my lights are on.
So where we are is the staff is putting together an actual document that would go to P&Z for recommendation, come back to the City Commission. As you know, we do have design guidelines for Park Avenue, for New England, for Morse, so it would be similar. And those would be, after P&Z, come back to City Commission, potentially for adoption. So see if there's questions that you might have.
Any questions for Jeff? Commissioner Cooper.
Jeff, I want to say thank you. On December the 16th of 2010, so that nobody becomes impatient, I recommended and the City Commission approved that we would have design guidelines for parking garages. So I would like to say thank you very, very much before I end my term as commissioner. I appreciate seeing that. But I would like to ask, some parking garages are particularly difficult to maneuver on the inside of. So there must be some standard relative to turning radius and size of parking places. And I don't profess to know what's good and bad, but I can tell you that many of the parking garages in downtown Orlando are bad. And I would like for us to at least consider that as you're looking at this. There are some really difficult parking garages to use. And air circulation, if that's a possibility.
Certainly, any of those garages that the circular entrance and exits become the most difficult.
It gets quite dangerous, actually.
If may I just follow up on Commissioner Cooper's question regarding air circulation? Are there certain requirements that you're forced to meet by state, federal, EPA, or anything to get in air in and out of there?
Yeah, they have to have 40% of the facades open in order to just have natural ventilation. Otherwise, it has to be mechanically ventilated.
Okay.
So, you know, garage, like, it's completely surrounded, like in Douglas Grant. Obviously, that has to be mechanically ventilated.
Right. Jeff, I appreciate this. I do think, and I saw it in regards to adjoining properties, and there needs to be that flexibility because there's a really interesting parking garage downtown Charleston, I think it is, and it doesn't look anything like any of our stuff here, but it fits in there very well, and it hides all the cars. They've done it very well. So I know as all the architectural styles change, we just need to be sure to be able to give those architects the flexibility as they're designing the adjoining building or whatever to, you know, just not lock them into this is the only style, because I know we said it with parking lots around like the YMCA design, you know, how we landscape. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get down to that level where we kind of say this is what we do, because there's so much flexibility that needs to be had.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Commissioner McMahon.
And I'm more concerned when we talk about the interior and the mm-hmm. parking management from the standpoint of where we're getting into these scenarios where part of the garage is part of public parking. Mm-hmm. I mean, my gut says on a private garage, if they want to make it the worst garage in the world on the inside, that's pretty much, you know, the marketplace will take care of that. But if we are sharing some of those spaces in one way, shape, or form as city spaces, that I'm much more concerned that those be appropriate to the city and what they do.
I'm kind of with you on that, but I'd love to have P&Z's.
Yeah, take a look at that. But I mean, again, I mean, if we're, you know, as Jeff said, I mean, if those are public spaces and we're trying to encourage people to park there, then I think that ought to be, we ought to be involved in that. Now, what happens elsewhere is kind of like, that's not my business. I mean, that's somebody else's interior. But if it's a public space that we're
like
using for that,
I hope P&Z has that discussion.
I'm sure having heard us, they will.
Just real quick, for the different sides facing, like one street front, one's a side, I may have missed it, but did you talk about different rules for the different facing, where they're facing?
I didn't, but that's a very good point, because you have your primary streets where you want your best look, and then on a secondary side street, it doesn't have to be as fancy or nice, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I just wanted to make sure that was something that was, because I'm sure we come up here for variances to do the side street as soon as we implemented something, that I would think you would have, you know, especially if you're up against another property, and it's kind of that view, like if you can see it, then it needs to look nice. If it's something you can't really see today, do we care? Tomorrow you could, I don't know.
Well, and I guess Bank of America is a perfect example. It's gorgeous on New England. You go around on Knowles, and it's pretty simple. So, you know, it's A Street and B Street. So,
well, our most recent parking garage is the Winter Park Hospital one, right?
Correct.
And so when you look at that, we're definitely a big improvement over other things that were going on before. So we must be going in the right direction.
Jeff, Randy, are we looking for three nods here to continue to move this forward?
Do we need?
Sure.
I think you have them. Yes. Thank you, Jeff.
Good job, Jeff.
2010.
I know there were a lot of people involved in that, so thank you. We're at the 5 o'clock hour, so do we want to open up for public comments?
Absolutely.
And take a little break?
Take a break.
Great. Anybody willing to Anybody wishing to address the commission on anything that's not on the agenda, please feel free to step forward, fill out a yellow card, and hand it to the city clerk.
Thank you. I'm here to request some help from the commission.
Sir, may I ask your name and address, please, for the record?
Yes, my name is John Kern. I'm on Roundaway Lane in Winter Park.
Thank you.
And my request is that I send a letter to the city administration almost 4 months ago on the subject of deepak donor benefits. And I was hoping to request some help getting a response to that letter. I've got copies of the correspondence that can be distributed to refresh your memories, because I believe all of the commission except Mr. Seidel have seen the correspondence before. And just as I said, I'd really like to have your help getting a response, because it's been almost 4 months.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask the city manager to comment on that?
Sure, I think I've responded, so I'm not sure why he hasn't seen the response.
Randy, would you do me a favor? Would you forward his response? Would you forward that response back to Mr. Kern and then CCS?
I'm sorry. Mr. Knight did respond to a letter that was written earlier. There was a February 18th letter, because Mr. Knight's response had a number of open questions and, in fact, raised some additional questions that were in the February 18th letter. That's the letter I'm referring to that has not been responded to.
I'll look at it.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Mr. Kern. Anyone else? Wow. It's only taken you 2 years, though.
And I've brought books. I'm Sean Schaefer. I live at 151 North Orlando, Trader Joe's only happy neighbor. And I'm here today to thank you so much. At the next commission meeting, you're going to get a report from the task force. And you could not have given me 5 better people to work with. They have been absolutely amazing, and they've worked so hard. We've met every week for a couple of months, and they've come to every community forum with me, and they've been all of them outstanding, but I especially want to thank you for your 5 appointees. And then I have a little homework. We've mentioned that we're in discussion with the Aspen Institute about a partnership and possibly a new facility. And the Aspen Institute sent us these nice books for you about rising to the challenge and re-envisioning public libraries. And I've marked, because you can just go to the end. Not that I recommend you do that when you read books. You shouldn't read the last thing first. But, They do have a conclusion and a call to action, and then they have 15 steps for leaders and civic civic leaders. And so I've marked that page for you if you don't have a lot of time and you want to skip to the end. They are, as I said, interested in partnering with us in a new facility, partially because it could be, as you'll see, a really exciting facility, and also because we're in the park. No one values education more than we do, and they're very interested in the civic engagement aspect of Winter Park. And so they haven't quite said yes yet, but they haven't said no either, so we have very high hopes. So I wanted to give these to you today, and if anybody else is interested in reading the Aspen report, at the library website, WPPL.org, right on our front page, is all about the task force, and there's a link to the report online. Thank you.
Kaylee, run to the wire.
Thank you very much.
I have one. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you for being here, Sean.
Thank you,
Sean. I didn't get one.
Good evening. My name is Marvin Fletcher. I want to make a little comment on the meeting.
Can't hear you, Marvin.
My name is Mary Ann Blanchard, and I'm the other lady at the English Court, and I just want to make a little comment on the meeting that you are having for the city view at the city center. And I talked to some of the people, the residents, and they was questioning about, I know that meeting is from 8 to 5:30, and most of the people work at 8 to 5:30 to 6 o'clock, and they wouldn't have a chance to be able to get there. And they just wanted to know. I know you have a website on there, too, and a phone number that they can call, and they just wanted to know if somewhere or other sometime y'all can have the meeting maybe from like from 6 to 7 or 6 to 8 or something like that for them to be able to make it to the meeting.
Dory?
We have been setting up stakeholder interviews for the City Visioning, and we do have 4 days in group interviews selected for the 10th, 11th, 24th, and 25th, but we are very happy to meet with people individually. If evenings work better, if they want to call Lisa or call me, we can set up individual times to meet with people and or meet with a group of people who want to meet at that hour. We're very happy to pull that together at this point. So if folks want to give us a call, we're happy to put a meeting together where if a group wants to meet, we can meet with them at whatever time works best for them.
Okay, then.
All right, if they could just give my office a call, we'll make that happen.
Thank you, Ms.
All right?
Fletcher.
Thank you.
Hi, William Sullivan, 1362 Richmond Road, Winter Park, Florida. I have a question for you. I heard the appointments, and you never quite came to a resolution. I apologize to the commission, but you never came to a resolution on what you were going to do as far as the Siegel and the other appointment. I just want to know, it's a constitutional, it's a charter command, commitment for you to do this. I heard from everyone here that everyone believes that both candidates are.
That's not coming before us.
Okay. Is there any reason why you can't vote on it tonight?
I can tell you that I did not ask. I did not move the bring them forward as appointees because I did not have support of the commission.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Anyone else? Great. So, Randy, how much time do we need to cut cake and get sugar in our bodies?
15, 20 minutes.
Great. So, why don't we get back together at 5:20?
And there's cake in the room next door for anyone who wants some.
Great. Thank you. Anything that anybody wants to pull from these? And just remember that 9B2 was pulled.
9A.
9A. Anyone else?
I'll move the rest of it.
Great. I'll second.
Great. Randy, I keep forgetting. You need a public comment on this?
Yes.
Great. Anyone wishing to comment on our consent agenda and the approval of it, please step forward. Seeing none, we'll call that to a vote. All in favor of consent agenda with 9A and 9B2 polled? Say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Commissioner Cooper.
I just wanted to check one thing and make sure we were all together on this. On page 15, I believe it is. I'm looking.
Okay.
My pages might be a little different. 15 of 270.
Okay.
So it would be page 8 of the actual minutes.
Okay.
Randy, this is kind of a question for you, too. I noticed that there was a development agreement that came through with First Third Bank or Third Fifth Bank. And it didn't mention the live oaks. It still says the cedar trees. And I just didn't want this to get lost. If indeed the minutes are correct, and I believe that they are, then that means that we might need to take a look at that agreement.
Mm-hmm. Could you point that out specifically, Commissioner?
Yes, it's Attorney Arthur Baker on behalf of the Fifth Third Bank. Right, and I believe that that's correct. Jeff can probably help us.
Well, that was what was Jeff had that. If you go up two paragraphs, where P&Z recommendations were that that live oaks are used instead of cedars.
Right, but it wasn't in some agreement that I just read from Larry. I think. It had the cedar.
It's a different agreement.
I want to clarify. I think Commissioner Cooper is saying there's the discrepancy between the development agreement and the minutes.
I
and
think
the minutes are correct in regards to live oaks. Is that correct?
We'll fix that.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
That was
great.
It. That's all. Move to approve.
Yes.
A second.
Great. Any comments from the public on 9B2? Seeing none, we'll close the floor. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Thank you. Jeff, are you on to 11A?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Public hearing, if you can.
Turn on the Elmo, please. This public hearing is a subdivision or a lot split request at 456 West Lyman to divide this property, which is two 50-foot wide lots in half, so that each of the 50-foot lots would be buildable.
Patrick, switch them to the overhead.
And as you,
yeah.
Elmo.
Michelle, the overhead?
Yeah. It's that button on the wall. There we go. So there's the property location there on the south side of Lyman, and you see it's two 50-foot lots. And the zoning for that area is R1A. R1A says you're supposed to have 75 feet for new lots, supposed to have 8,500 square feet in terms of lot area. And so they need variances for the two 50-footers and the fact that these very shallow lots are 3,750 in terms of square feet as opposed to the 8,500. And that's what we do in these lot splits. First, we look at the zoning, but what takes precedence in our codes is what we call the comprehensive plan test, because that's the comparison of what they're asking for to the neighborhood standards. And it has worked pretty good in the past because it actually is a door that swings both ways. Because if we have lots that are below the minimum requirements, but we look at the neighborhood and that's the prevailing standard, smaller lots, and that gives us some justification for granting a variance. And it has also happened the other way around Lake Sylvan, for example, where even though the zoning says 75 feet, all the lots on the lake are 90 or more, and so we've required more than the minimum standard. And so that's why it has worked well. And of course, in this particular case, you see the 500-foot radius that the codes say we use. There are 44 homes within that area, and the average lot width is 55 feet. Of course, average is difficult to use because unless you had lots smaller than 50, you'd never get to 50 as an average. So the way we often do it then is the median, and basically 80% of the lots in that area are also 50-foot lots. So these two 50-footers are the same as 80% of the other lots in the surrounding area. And that lends credence then to, at least in terms of lot width, the area, the lot widths being comparable. Of course, because of the way they platted these lots, only 75 feet deep, it's difficult, if not impossible, to meet the comparables in terms of lot area. I'm not sure why, if you look at that block, why these lots are so shallow on the north side, 75 feet, and so deep on the bottom. There was an old platted alley there, but I'm not sure what the history or significance was for that platting. Originally, the applicant was talking about doing two-story homes on these lots, and in your packet is a representation of how a two-story home would fit with absolutely no variances from the code. But staff was concerned about two stories fitting in this area, asked the applicant to explore doing a one-story model and also taking advantage of what we have in the code that applies to 69, 70-foot wide lots, which is a 10-foot rear setback. Because we've already said in the code, if you're 70 feet deep, you can have a 10-foot rear. What's the difference between 70 and 75? And so the applicant did agree. We also have representations of how one-story homes could be built on these lots, again, meeting all the code except for that rear setback request. So at planning and zoning, the P&Z board felt that these lot sizes, albeit they need variances, but they are comparable, again, to 80% of the other lots in the neighborhood, So they have recommended approval. They did feel that one-story product was much more in character with the street, and so the approval is contingent upon doing the one-story product, which the applicant is perfectly content in doing as well. And so that's the recommendation from P&Z for approval with that one condition.
Great. Any questions for staff? Commissioner Cooper.
Jeff, can you go back to the comprehensive plan test? And I can't recall the exact wording on that. Can you explain to me how the comprehensive plan test relates to the total size of the lot? I understand it relates to the 50-foot, but we're cutting the standard size required for an R1A is 8,500 square feet, and we're talking about allowing 37, which is less than half. And so I never assumed that that comp plan test applied to the size of the lots. Can you help me with the language that led you to that conclusion?
No, the comp plan test does apply to both the frontage and the land area, because you could drastically meet just the frontage and not the land area. But again, it's a guide. It's not a mandatory. Unless you meet it, thou shall not pass go. In this particular case, I think what staff recognized and what P&Z did is the platted alley that made this block 75-foot wide lots is something that we don't have any control over since they did it in 1886.
No, I don't have a problem with that. I'm just curious about the total overall, because to me it seems like what you're doing is you're changing the zoning without changing the zoning when you start allowing a much smaller minimum size of a lot. That's all. That's my concern. It's not allowing a 50-foot lot. It's not allowing a 10-foot setback. It's when you reduce the overall size of a lot by 50% less than the minimum standard for the size of a lot. How do we justify doing that without changing the zoning?
Well, you can do it by variance. And again, from P&Z's perspective, it was the function of that alley platted in 1886 that puts us in this situation.
But if we left them together, then it would meet the minimum, right? If we didn't
split them. If we denied the request, sure, it wouldn't need a variance at all. It wouldn't be here.
But aren't there single-family homes on all those other 50-foot lots?
Yes.
Okay, so
are they also 3,750 feet square footage on the lots?
In on the south
side. They all are, yeah.
But obviously when you get into parts of the platted blocks that are deeper.
But all of those along that road are 75-foot deep and 50-foot wide?
Within that block length, except for the one on the corner, within that black one. Block
length,
they are.
So we would be making the exception probably to apply to that whole area eventually, if we start with this. Are there a lot of other lots that are only 70-foot deep?
There are, when you go over to Douglas and Lyman and New England, there are six blocks there that are all platted at 69-70 feet deep, so it's not out of character.
I see it.
And we have seen new homes like the one John Schofield just built there on Lyman. That's on a 69-foot.
Yeah, I drove around the wooden path. That's cute.
I'd like to move it.
Can you have a little more discussion?
Well, if someone seconds it, we have a motion on the table. Anyone second?
I'll second it for purposes of the discussion.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Mackey. Commissioner
Seidel? Yeah, I talked with Phil on Friday about this. I believe I need to let you guys know that, right, because it's a public hearing.
That's
what you said. Well, one of the things that...
Before you get into that, City Attorney, should we all share any conversations we've had?
Lot splits are usually not considered to be quasi-judicial, but it wouldn't hurt to disclose in the spirit of transparency.
And why don't we do that since we're discussing it? Commissioner Sprinkle, any conversations?
No.
I have not either.
I don't think I have.
I've not either.
Just me, huh?
So go ahead. Why, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, well, one of the, what I had talked to him about was, I have no, I don't have any issues putting the lots and putting the houses on. I think the fact that he could, he's down to the one story. What I asked for, what I talked to him about, that I thought was interesting in the conformance and comp plan section D, where it talked about, we could talk about the style, and where, you know, what I had indicated was, I would just not like to see two contemporary houses next to each other. If we had a contemporary house in a different style, and like if you want to do two styles next to each other that fit the what was in the neighborhood, that would make sense to me. And so that's where I was looking at it, is it would be nice to have two different style homes next to each other. And that's the only thing that I had talked to him about.
During the break, when I talked to Mr. Keene, he's going to come up here and address how to solve that.
And, you know, other than that, to me, it's nice to see some smaller houses being put in there.
Great. Would the applicant like to make a presentation? Phil, would you like to step forward? I saw that there was a video, so I figured you'd want to share it. I don't believe there's any other comments from the commission.
My name is Phil Keene, 229 Alexander Place, Winter Park. I did do a little video that we initially showed to the P&Z sort of on what this could, the idea of this, that we can start from the beginning.
Can we start that again from the beginning? No music.
No music. I can hum. You wouldn't like that, though. I was in a play once. My mom said, if you sing, I'm not coming. So she denies that, though. So the concept was, sort of, these are, it doesn't have to, these are just one story, sort of mid-century modern inspired, from 50s, 60s, kind of that, I mean, it looks modern, but it's really sort of inspired by some of the stuff that was happening, in our town during that period. There's some great old homes that you can drive around and see this sort of style that's got a little flair to it. And so that was where that was. And then I've come up with some ideas on, these are just some, I'll pass this out in a minute, but, not having two of the same things next to each other was really a concern. So I just wanted to try to show you, let me give this to you. Quick, down and dirty, kind of conceptual.
Once you sign this, we're going to save it. It's going to become famous.
This conceptual, just a little front porch kind of layout with the side porch chair, park your car, not get wet. Conceptually, it's really just about doing something different and unique and. The homeowner that owns the lot wants to live in one of these, so that's how this all came about. Couldn't really have wanted to spend the money to do one big house. He didn't really need a big house, so he approached me, and I came up with this concept. And so one of them is going to be lived in by the current owner of the property, and the other one's going to be hopefully sold to somebody that would like a modest home.
Okay. Any questions from the commission? Mr. Cooper.
Phil, can you tell me that green spot out front?
Can you pause the video?
No, it's all right. It's okay. I don't mind it running.
Okay.
But remember when we were talking about the new brownstones next to Trevilian?
Yes.
Turnover. We talked about the tree that was there. Do you remember the size of the circle? And will that circle fit in this front yard?
Oh, I'm sure.
Because that's my concern. My concern is not about style. I do appreciate the idea of not having two things side by side that are the same. I do think that's a good idea. But the other thing that I feel a burden about is that we're sitting on a high recharge area of the aquifer. Drainage is critical. Every time we start reducing the size of these lots, there are going to be 20 people behind you that want to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
And
if we are in a situation where we're undergrounding utilities, we're making the lot smaller, at what point can we not accommodate trees, and have we started to impact the environment in a negative way? If it was one-off, if it was just you today in this house and that was going to be the end of it, I would have no question at all. My question is that sense of responsibility that says to the environment, to the aquifer, to the supporting of canopy trees, am I making the right decision?
So, and, Michelle, are you asking them to plant a tree in that front yard?
No, I'm just asking if it will support the tree that's next to Terra Nova's house, and it may. If it's 50 feet or 25 feet, I don't know how big it is.
I think the front setback on these are 25 feet from the property line.
So you take about 5 feet out for a sidewalk, and then you got 20 feet.
I think the sidewalk would be
sidewalk is out. Side of that.
Yeah,
so it's 25 feet from the right of way.
Is the green?
Yeah, so green, and if you consider the lot 70 feet or 75, I mean, a third of the lot is in the front yard.
On the other side, would the utilities underground be on the other side of the sidewalk? So can we do, on a lot this size with a home, can we do undergrounded utilities, support a canopy tree, and have a little home like this? And
absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. And you know, the undergrounding can run, I mean, during the on the property line, shared, you know, it's certainly,
And is there a way that this is unique over those other, what did you say we had, how many lots, Jeff?
On that street, there's 8 lots.
No, on this street, there's 8 lots, but throughout the West Side community, how many lots are configured like this? Because, see, we're now creating lots. These lots do not exist 50 foot by 70 foot. We are creating them. But how many of them currently exist?
Well, the lots exist.
Oh, I mean,
the zoning to accommodate those lots doesn't exist.
Right.
Oh, well, there are hundreds and hundreds of 50-foot lots in the Hannibal Square.
No, 50 by 70? I thought most of them were deeper than that.
In terms of the shallow lots, there's roughly, I'd say, somewhere between 60 to 70.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No? Great. We have a motion and a second.
Thank you.
The floor?
Yes. I was wondering if Commissioner Seidel wanted to make an amendment based on the sketch at all.
The
motion that I seconded was the elevations that are shown
here. Fine.
And so I just.
Which are represented by the video we just saw, too.
That is correct, right. Yes. And so the question, the applicant had shown us this, and I.
Yeah, and
it's not part of the motion I seconded. So if there was,
well, can I just say that
I'm just merely asking from a protocol standpoint.
Well, I'm fine with the way it exists now. I mean, I understand, but I want to be very careful about going to that level at this commission level. That's my perspective. I mean, you can feel free to do whatever it is you'd like to do, but I want to be very careful.
And I appreciate that. So I just was.
Yeah, no, I find this a very interesting situation because the property owner is actually moving into one of the houses. So to me, it's almost, well, there's a property owner went because his property is and he's going to live next to it. And if he's fine with both of them, I was unaware that the property owner was the one that was moving in. It's kind of like, to me, it's, you know, I look at what a lot of people like in the neighborhoods is the variety of things. So that's where I was going with it. And it's almost, like you say, is it something we want to dictate, maybe in certain cases, but is this a case where I feel we ought to dictate to him that it's a property owner moving in, so if he wants it, I'm not going to tell him he can't do it, you know.
Great. That's good. Then why don't I open the floor to public comment? Anyone wishing to address the commission on this matter, please step forward. Bring your yellow card.
My name is Lurleen Fletcher. I live at 79. I was just trying to go by the line.
Now, come on, you moved now. You got to.
I'm at 811 English Court. And my comment is about this single family house that he's going to build there. You all is now trying to put new looks over on the west side. I mean, single-family homes, yes, but it's nothing wrong with trying to modify the neighborhood, but in order to put these t-
type of houses that are being built, coming up, that is showing that you all are taking all of the look that was there from where we stayed or where we stay and changing it around to some other kind of look that is, that doesn't even look like it's fit into there. So that shows and tells me now that you all are really trying to move us off the west side. So we can't live there because of the modified of the house that's coming, the type and the shapes of the house that's coming to the neighborhood. I mean, that type of housing, just like the one that's built on English Court, that two-story building, everybody asks me what that is. I don't care who comes to me. They ask me, what is that thing over there across the street? I said, that's a home. And they say, are you sure? This is on English Court. It's a two-story building that was just built there. And the modifieds of everything that's coming over to the west side now look like stuff that's supposed to be in some other area. And give us a break. I know we're not going to be there. That's what's trying to happen now, is we are just trying to be pushed out.
Thank you, Ms. Fletcher. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else, any further commission discussion?
No, sir.
I'd like to make one comment for the record. I want to be very, very clear that I am not voting against this because of the architecture. I am voting against this because we are cutting in half the size of the lot by subdividing it, and it's only half of the minimum requirement for an R1 lot. And once you do this to an R1 lot on the west side, or any place else in the community, you have to defend yourself the next time someone wants to do this. I believe in trees, I believe in pervious space. I'm very appreciative of the single family home that you are putting on these lots, and I want that to not be misunderstood. My issue is pervious space, recharge of the aquifer, and our trees. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Cindy, would you call the roll, please?
Sure. Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. There you are.
Okay. Our next public hearing, if you put the Elmo back on, please, is a similar subdivision or lot split request for the property at 500 Fairfax Avenue. On the south side of Fairfax, that is a block that is originally platted as 50-foot lots, and 500 Fairfax right now is two of the lots together, 100 feet, and so they're asking to split the lot into the two 50-footers as it was originally platted. The south side of Fairfax actually was zoned R2 for quite a number of years, until 1976, if you're wondering what that little small condo multifamily thing is there on the southeast corner. That's because when it was R2, that was built on the corner of Pennsylvania and Fairfax, and that's how that got there. But since that time, it's been R1AA, and R1AA says you're supposed to have for new lots 100 feet of lot width and 10,000 square feet of land area. And these lots are very long and deep, so they have more than enough lot area at roughly the 12,500 square feet that each would have, but as you heard, they're 50 feet in lieu of the 100. So there is a zoning variance requested, and again, just as we talked in the last one, we rely upon a comprehensive plan test of the surrounding area within 500 feet, and most of the debate at P&Z focused on what is the surrounding area, because you have two completely, more or less, different sets of statistics if you look at, and you only look at the properties that are zoned the same, that are zoned single family, we don't compare it to R2 sections. So if you look at the neighborhood that is most immediate to these houses, Fairfax and Richmond, you look at all of those homes, then the median lot size is 50 to 53 feet, and 71% of the lots are 50 feet wide in the neighborhood, and all the other 8 homes on that south side of Fairfax are sitting on single 50-foot lots. If you broaden it, though, and say, well, that's not the neighborhood, the people in Bonnie Burn should be included, then the statistics do not come out as comparable or favorable for the applicant, because there are larger homes there on the other side of the creek on Bonnie Burn, and that's even excluding Sevilla, which technically is within the 500 feet. So the consensus of planning and zoning was to focus on the immediate neighborhood. They thought that's really the standard in terms of does this fit in or not. And so they discounted the homes that they felt were outside the neighborhood, Bonnie Burn and Sevilla, and then citing, as I said, the 70% that are of this size in the neighborhood and the other 8 on that south side. That's why you have a positive recommendation from P&Z by a 6-1 vote, 1 dissenting vote, to recommend approval. You do have some conceptual plans that are in your packet. Applicant wanted to demonstrate to P&Z what kind of homes and City Commission could be built there, and that homes could be built fitting within all of the codes. But we're not approving the specific homes, just a lot split. So with that, see if there's any questions from the commission.
Commissioner Cooper?
Oh.
I thought it
was you. But I do want to make sure I understand. These do meet the minimum lot size set forth for an R1A lot.
Correct. 12.5 versus 10,000.
So it's just about the width.
I'd like to move it. Second.
Great. Further discussion with the commission. Mr. Seidel.
Thank you. This is kind of the same issue here with the other lot, where I don't know what kind of styles that they're showing. And there's 2 items, I guess, that I want to just find out if we have could be addressed. Was there's quite a tree canopy towards the back of that lot, and I don't know, how extensive that is. I know from, I live over on Richmond, so I'm over on the street to the right. But the with regards to the trees in the back, with the current regulations, are they allowed to go in there and, for example, there's a 100-foot oak that's nice. Are they allowed to take that down?
Well, I'm going to let, when the applicant gets up here in 1 second, he's going to probably address it more specifically. Okay. I will tell the commission that given this streamfront location, the plans will go to planning and zoning for review and approval. Tree preservation is one of their criteria. But, the reality is here are lakefront lots. If you're going to put your house or your swimming pool and there's a tree right in the middle of the buildable area, then, so P&Z works the best they can to preserve the maximum amount of trees. That's generally, but the applicant will probably be able to specifically.
Okay, and then just the second question was on the style of the 2 houses also, again, that is this one.
I'll say about that.
Any questions from here? Would the applicant like to make the presentation?
Hi, my name is Adam Burt. I am the property owner at 500 Fairfax, and my wife and I have been looking in the neighborhood for quite some time, and we stumbled upon this great piece of property. We originally went looking at the house hoping we could fix it up, but unfortunately it's just too far gone. So at that point, buying a lot that large to do a tear down and build a new home, it was just wasn't affordable for us. So we were fortunate to come across Mr. Albert, who's my business partner. So we split it in half, basically, the cost. We would build a house for me and my family there, and he would build a spec home. Just a quick few points, and Mr. Bridge already touched on these, is the lots were, they're originally plotted as 250-footers, so, and then even at 50, we are still over the 10,000-square-foot requirement. So we're just basically asking for the one variance. I did walk the neighborhood, and I got several signatures. We only had one opposition. It was the lady next door, and she was concerned about our privacy, and I told her we would work out, you know, the landscaping and keeping the vegetation stuff, and she was open to that. The neighbor on the other side, he signed our petition. I did have a tree survey done. You had some questions, and I can show you exactly which trees are on the property. It's kind of hard to see, but so in the back right here, this tree right here is marked at number 30. It's actually a 24-inch oak from the way back by the tree. And then there's a 26-inch oak. But we did have all the trees surveyed. I can hand this to you if you want to take a look at it.
Well, is it something you expect to be able to work your plans around some of those trees? And where I'm going with that in general is I would hate to see a gap in the trees when you look at that along that creek there.
Yeah, we're definitely going to work on keeping as much as we can. Mm-hmm. There's one camphor tree that's like right behind my house that probably would definitely have to go, but I understand those are a nuisance tree anyway, so that shouldn't be an issue. There's quite a few oaks up front, and we would try to save those. Okay. However, if you've been by them lately, it's the property hasn't been maintained at all. Those trees, I would have the arborist come take a look at them and just see if they're healthy to begin with. But I understand your point. And our idea is to, we'd like to build two smaller homes. These are just some kind of ideas, just basically a couple of cottages, just to kind of give you an idea.
Been on house, haven't you?
Yes, all the time. So,
any questions for Mr. Burt?
Yeah, no, just a comment. I mean, I think that all is very reasonable, and I'd like to hear that those are things that you've looked at already. So I appreciate that.
And you are doing two different facade designs on the
trees.
Yes,
ma'am. That's
great. And you'll save the trees.
Yes, as best as we can, but of course, the healthy ones, absolutely.
And Bert, we're going to open the floor to public comment, okay. But if you'd like to address any comments that are made during the public mm-hmm. session to come back up afterwards, you're free to do that.
Okay.
Okay, let's open the floor to public comment. Anyone wishing to address the commission, please step forward.
Thank you. Good evening. Hi, I'm Katie Catherine Campbell, and I live at 1351 Richmond Road. I live around the corner on Fairfax Dead Ends at Richmond. And so I was notified that this variance was being sought. And of course, my house is R1AA. So I'm going to bring attention to another facet that hasn't been brought up tonight. And that is the fact that 500 Fairfax has deeded lake access to Lake Virginia at the lot we all share equally at College Point. To bring it to its most simplified form, let's say there are 10 pieces of that pie. The deed to my home entitles me very simply to a piece of that pie. Now there are more than 10. The only person who can speak for my piece of property is me. There is no homeowners association. It's a neighborhood association. We all get along. Amazing, but true. But we don't vote people into office to serve, to represent us. No one person can speak for another property owner. So I am here to speak as myself, my own property. If this variance were approved, an extremely buildable R1 AA lot, half-acre size, that can accommodate a lovely large home where an investor could make a profit or a homeowner could go in and improve that property. That's a possibility. In this particular circumstance, they wish to subdivide and create two homes for sale. Both homes then have deeded lake access, which increases the number of pieces to that pie. I personally, and I want to go on record, I have not signed a real estate contract selling any portion of my property. I have not given verbal agreement to sell any portion of my property to enhance somebody else's profit margin. And I know that not all property owners who have deeded lake access on that College Point lot have been notified, official notification, that their property ownership, their rights to their property could potentially be diluted. So, for the record, I'm opposed. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see if there's any... I take your point. Let's see if there's any other questions from the public. Great. Any other questions from the public? Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. Commissioner, or Vice Mayor Spring.
Wasn't the Virginia Heights, I used to live in Virginia Heights, I got that same access she has now. Wasn't this originally two lots?
It was.
It was originally two lots, so there was originally two plots that had that access?
Yes.
That, so is this at one time had double access, it didn't have single access. That's my point, is that at one time that was the way it was designed, and I just don't think that's enough to change it. That had a lot to do with my thinking when I looked at it, was that it had originally been that way, because we just changed that zoning when?
80,
yeah, and I lived over there in 70s. But I know exactly what she's saying.
So that property's always been available back in the 70s. It was
That's a very, very good reason to have it, because your access is right at College Point. We used to keep sailboats there, so yes. So I just don't think, I know it was originally designed to carry two families, not just one.
Can I ask staff that question, or the city attorney? Does that indeed become the fact, Larry, that if we split this property, both properties have access to the lake?
Yes, I would think so.
Or does one just carry?
No, I would think both lots would have it. I mean, I haven't studied, that would be the normal result. I'm not sure that rises to a level of a legal issue for the reasons Commissioner Sprinkle said, but also the people who live there are subject to the Winter Park ordinances, which include the ability to split lots. And so I'm not sure that, you know, I understand the point, but I'm not sure it rises to the level of a legal issue.
Okay.
Because that's just an appurtenant right of lots that can be created pursuant to your code that allow for lot splits.
Okay.
Larry, what?
Go ahead, Commissioner
Seidel. What about her question, though, about notifying all the neighbors?
I think the lot split for small lot splits, four or less lots, you notify within 500 feet. So I just don't know who's within 500 feet.
But
Jack, am I right? Is it within 500 feet you notify?
That's right, and the boundaries of the subdivision extend beyond that. That's
not
the code.
So you notified everyone within 500 feet.
Right. I guess where I'm going is it's deeded that we all own that. That's what he said, because this is part of my deed. And I wanted to make sure it was part of my deed when I bought the house. So what she's saying is that by buying this, you're not just buying that, you're also buying a piece of this lake on the frontage. And so therefore, all those people that own that property, which is all of us in Virginia Heights.
We're not notified.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we haven't been doing that. I mean,
it's 500 feet.
Virginia Heights goes up Lakeview, goes up Highland Road. I mean, that deeded property is huge.
The fact that there's a subdivision that extends beyond 500 feet isn't relevant to the code.
To the code.
Yeah. The code says you notify property owners within 500 feet of the affected subdivision, which in this case is a lot split.
So,
and I'm just confirming that they notice per the code.
Correct.
So it sounds like to me for this particular situation, we have done what we need to do. On the other hand, Commissioner Seidel, if as a commission, we feel like the code needs to be revised, that's within our authority in the future also, to try to pursue that if you can get three people at some point that might would like to do.
She does have broad authority if you find that it's not in the public interest to deny a lot split. I mean, you don't have to grant a lot split. It's very much within your town discretion.
Well, it's before us.
I appreciated Commissioner Sprinkle's. Had this been originally one lot that we were splitting, that is one question. But in this case, it was originally two lots.
What's listed as two.
And so, I mean, but there would have been two pieces of the pie.
Right.
We're not creating a new piece of the pie. We are merely acknowledging pieces that were there in a different format. And in this case, two homes as opposed to one that currently exists there. So I'm comfortable with it. Had we been taking a 100-foot lot that was always a 100-foot lot and splitting from half, that to me is a separate question.
Great.
So the question is, was it a 100-foot lot when the deeds were executed for the common area? Well, and it sounds like it wasn't. But
the appraiser also has it.
Well, it wasn't because it was platted as 50-foot
lots.
It was
50-foot lots.
Along with the park platted at the same time.
Yeah, and I'll just add one little historical comment for everybody. If you look over at Oxford, where lot number 17 is, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, there used to be a house in that lot. It's now part of that property, and there's no house there. So if you took one out,
and added one.
Right, that there's a net reduction in the amount of property owners when that house. I think there was another house there that might have went also.
They did the same thing at Lakeview like 30 years ago. There used to be another one right there, and they took it out. So you're right.
We're getting some history lessons from seats 1 and 2.
I know. It's a great neighborhood.
Appreciate the insights. Great. Well, any further comment or any further discussion from the commission?
One comment for staff. Tonight, I've noticed some of the emails are included in our agenda packet. And I think that's wonderful, but I also note that it is very selective when sometimes we get them and sometimes we don't. I think it's an excellent thing to do, and I think that all emails that come from our citizens relative to any project we're reviewing should be considered.
Yeah, sometimes I find that people communicate directly to the commission, and so I'm not aware of those emails, but the ones where we're copied, then we put them as the backup.
Okay. So we'll just send it to you if we want it included in the packet. Great. Thank you.
Mr. Bird, I'll give you the option if you care to readdress the commission after that comment, but I'm not sure you need to.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. And Cindy, would you call the roll, please?
Sure. Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. 11C, the request for Lunenburg Country Record.
Publish the titles of record, please.
Larry, would you please, can we have a simultaneous public hearing?
Yes, yes, sir. An ordinance amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article 1, Comprehensive Plan, so as to change the future land use designation of single-family residential future land use to open space and recreation on the property of 2011 Via Tuscany, more particularly described herein, providing for conflict severability and an effective date. An ordinance amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article 3, Zoning and the Official Zoning Map, so as to change single-family residential R1AA district zoning to Parks and Recreation PR district zoning on the property at 2011 Via Tuscany, more particularly described herein, providing for conflict severability and an effective date.
Great. Thank you.
The Winter Park Racquet Club has a contract contingent upon this approval to purchase the property at 2011 Via Tuscany, out in the front of the club on the frontage of Via Tuscany, and they are motivated to do this because, as you see on the map, it squares off their property. However, that property is zoned, as you would expect, with a house on it, single-family residential. So in order to be used as part of the club and for club activities, it needs to be rezoned to what the rest of the Racquet Club is zoned as, which is parks and recreation, which does allow for private recreational clubs and facilities, such as Winter Park Pines Golf Course. In this case, the Racquet Club, they're allowed as conditional uses. And this acquisition is beneficial to the Racquet Club for a number of reasons. The one I mentioned by squaring it off, but also
It allows the club to widen the entrance road that where you come in on the south side now to have two-way traffic. Otherwise, it would be cutting off a few feet of that neighbor's driveway and some trees. It's really not doable under the current situation. By changing the entrance road into entrance and exit, what that lets them do is eliminate the drive that goes around on the north side of the tennis courts, which is a wonderful addition and change for the neighbors that live over there. They don't have to deal with the traffic and the headlights and the car noise at night. But it's also very beneficial to the club because it allows them to green up that entire area with some outdoor patio space, with some other amenity space, as well as there is plans to put one more tennis court in the front, which has already been approved by the city, and it lets them add a few feet to that additional tennis court in order to make that regulation size. What the acquisition also allows in the future is for them to make some use of this house for club activities. They're desperate for administrative office space because they're crammed in little closets and spaces inside the existing building. Like every place else, they don't have enough storage. They need to convert the building that's right outside, which is storage, to have a little bride's room because they have no place to change when they have the various weddings that happen at the club. So this allows them some additional uses of that existing home for club purposes. I mentioned that the racquet club is a conditional use. They are. This is the first reading of the ordinance, so there is a conditional use, but it's going to come back at the second reading when it can be effective and approved at the second reading. And that would approve the things that I just went through in terms of the list of two-way drive, greening up the property, etc. The other good thing about the conditional use is it gives the commission, the city, control over future uses of this single-family home property. So if they're going to do anything dramatic to that house, if they're going to add on to it, if they're going to change the front yard, if they're going to do anything significant other than go inside and renovate what's there, then they'll be back in front of P&Z and City Commission for review of that conditional use approval. The Racquet Club has made a number of significant improvements on site in the last couple of years. I think they have added parking spaces that has helped not only the club membership, but also cut down on the parking off-site. They have added sidewalks to help pedestrian safety within their club boundaries. There's also some significant new stormwater retention areas with the clay separators. That's a problem with the runoff from. So the club has made some really significant improvements to their properties. This lets them go the next step by bringing this into the fold and definitely beautifying and greening up the north side by the lake. So the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend unanimously for approval of both the change of the comp plan and the rezoning.
Great. Any questions for staff?
Sorry. Did I read that they also were asking for a tennis court that was larger than what they had approval for in the past?
They have.
I didn't hear you say anything about that.
Yes.
Tell me where that is.
They have approval from 2 or 3 years ago to add another court in the front. But when you are adding that court in between the two drives, it's not long enough to be regulation.
Okay.
And so by eliminating the drive on the north,
right,
they can add the extra 20 feet to the court and make it regulation.
But they're asking for the increase in size now, because before we just approved it as a training.
Well, they will be at the second meeting.
Okay. But what you're saying is it's because they couldn't do it because they had the roadway there. Now they can build a court that's regulation size because they don't have to have that roadway coming in up there. Got it. That's fine. I'm all happy with it. Have we moved it yet?
No. Well, not yet.
Okay.
City Attorney, do we need to disclose any conversations we're
having? Yes, we have comments.
The second ordinance is quasi-judicial. The first on the comp plan is legislative.
The zoning change we do?
Yes, zoning is quasi-judicial.
I've had discussions with the applicant. I don't believe I've had any commissions or any discussions with city staff. Anyone?
I've had no discussions with anyone.
No.
Okay. Great. Commissioner Cooper.
I think Greg was...
I just had kind of a quick question, Jeff, on your map. The map that you're showing that's got the master plan doesn't actually include the lots that we're changing the zoning, right?
No, that's right. That was prior to.
Okay.
Do we have the phase two changes?
No, that previous picture was
it. I know. I believe the master plan was done before the acquisition of this property was considered, so that's why that master plan is not included.
Well, the phase two changes are available. Are they in that plan? Are they incorporated in what we're seeing?
No. It vaguely shows on the aerial, I think, if you...
Oh, thank you very much.
This one's updated. If you can just, if you go to the next...
This is a two-way street.
Okay, so that's an existing house that they're just wanting to utilize.
Showing up there.
Yes, I guess.
Okay.
Yep, thank you for clearing that.
Jeff, I do have a question. One thing that I was a little bit disappointed, the staff report said there's no fiscal, no financial impact. And, of course, to the taxpayers, there is a financial impact. And I just want to see if there's anything that we can do about that. When I look at the way the club is assessed, the land value for parks and recreation is like $10 a square foot. For a single family home, it's like $19 a square foot. For a building on a parkland, it's about $25 a square foot. And for a building on a single family home, it's about $122 a square foot. So there is a, however small, large, it doesn't matter, but in the staff report, I would love to see the fiscal impacts where it says financial impacts on most of our staff reports. I would kind of like to understand exactly, I think for Winter Park it becomes very small because much of those taxes go to other people.
Right. The entire taxes on the entire property is below 5,000. It comes to
us.
Park.
But we're,
so it's going to drop
we are making
below.
Decisions for many government entities. Yeah, I mean, as we do this, it impacts everybody, you know, quite frankly. And I would just love to have that visibility when we do this. And
there's different thresholds of what we think is a fiscal impact. I mean, when we bought the property up on Temple Trail, we took $2,000 off the tax rolls there when we bought it as a park. So,
but that was for a public park, not a private club. And yes. All I'm asking is that when we get a staff report and it says fiscal impact, I'd like for it to talk to that. My only issue about this at all is that we, and I'm sure it's your intention, that we maintain the residential character. Because if you look at parks and recs and you look at the allowable building mass that could ultimately be allowed there, I would never want to see the residential character of that change. And I guess my question to you is that your plan also? And if not, then I would probably want to make an amendment that if we're going to do this, we don't alter the residential, not necessarily the building, but the setbacks and the, we don't get any closer to the street in your single family neighborhood than we are now.
That's well, Commissioner, why don't we ask the applicant to step forward, if you wouldn't mind. Just identify yourself,
because
please, Charlie.
I didn't have a chance to talk to Charlie.
Hi, I'm Charlie Madden, Moorhead and Vaughn. I'm a civil engineer working on the project, and I'm also a member of the Racquet Club. To divulge that, and to answer your question, the plans at this point are, if you've been out there and look at the house, it's a beautiful structure, it's a beautiful home, and it, at this point, and especially with what the club's paying for that property, we'll be utilizing that house as is. And, you know, if we ever did want to do anything that was major to it, as Jeff alluded to, we'd have to come back before you all.
And have you got concurrence? Do we have any letters in the file or anything from the adjacent property owner to your south?
The club met with the adjacent property owners, and everybody was okay with what we're doing. Now, I don't believe there's anybody here to speak on it, but yeah, I think everybody was satisfied.
Especially the ones in the south, I think.
Yeah, we did a community outreach to all of them, and they came over to the club and had a meeting with us to review what our plans are, and everybody was okay with it.
Any other questions for the applicant while he's... Great. Thank you, Charlie. Charlie, if there are any questions from the public after the open podium, we'll let you come back up and address them. Any other questions from the commission? Commissioner Flanagan?
I was wondering if you wanted a motion before we had the public come up and speak. I'd like to make two motions. The first is to approve the amendment to the comprehensive plan, and the second one is to amend the official zoning map as stated in the application.
Okay, we'll take those two separate motions. On the first, do we have a second?
Second, both of them. Since you wouldn't take my first one.
Great. We will note that those are two separate motions and two separate seconds. Thank you. We'll open the floor to public comment. Anyone wishing to address the commission on this matter, please step forward. Turn your yellow card. Seeing none, we'll close the floor. Is there any further discussion from the commission? Great.
No, sir.
Cindy, would you call a roll, please?
Yes.
On the first, I apologize. On the first motion to the change to the comprehensive plan.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMeekin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. And now on the change to the zoning plan.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMeekin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Good luck. Thanks, guys. We have 11E. Dory.
That would be me. Thank you. May I ask for clarification just on something that Commissioner Cooper asked on that last item with regard to a fiscal impact or some kind of financial? We don't do that on staff reports. If you want us to do that, that would be a change to how we do business. And would you want to?
On the planning and zoning.
Right. We don't evaluate comprehensive plan amendments or rezonings for tax benefits. It's not in the code. It's not part of the conditions that we look at.
Sure.
That's
a good
question. My issue is if we do it then, if we start doing it for just specifics, we should probably do it overall.
Well, but Dory, I also think the point was it said there. Commissioner Cooper's point was it says specifically there's no fiscal.
No, it didn't. I just went back and read it. Does not say that.
Okay.
So, I mean,
no, I was just used to seeing it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Right.
Our issue is right now that's not
even a big deal.
That's not a criteria that we use when we look at.
Wait a minute. What does that mean to us by taking something like that off the tax rolls when you take $500,000?
And we don't look at that as criteria for anything that we usually bring with you at this level.
So we'll just ask if it's a question.
Thank you.
When Jeff was up there just for a while, there was no controversy, Dory.
I sat quietly, believe it or not. I have that capability, believe it or not. I'm here. Actually, this could have been an action item. We chose to put it on the public hearing. We thought at one point we were going to have a resolution to go with it, and that didn't happen. Tonight I'd like to present to you a tri-party agreement, a real estate sale and purchase between the Orange County School Board, the City of Winter Park, and UP Fieldgate U.S. Investments. This has been a tri-party agreement that's been underway for 9 months, 10 months.
May I just halt you for a moment?
Yes.
Just for anybody listening at home or anybody in the audience that came to hear public hearing 11E or 11D, we have table that for this meeting. So I'm sorry. I just want to reiterate that in case anybody's listening.
It was pulled by the applicant.
That's correct, Commissioner McMahon. Sorry, Dory. Please.
No, that's fine. As you all may recall, you approved a project on 1792, the Whole Foods project, and one of the development conditions was the construction of the Lee Road extension. In order to make that construction happen, UP Fieldgate began negotiations with the Orange County School Board to acquire property that is a part of the Winter Park Votech site. In order for the approval to go forward to the school board insisted that the city actually take acquisition of the property and that UP Fieldgate would then pay the school board for the property itself. They did not want to transfer it to a private party, but chose to transfer it to the city. The other aspects of the agreement that were addressed was not only that acquisition piece, but also the school district was very set in wanting to make sure that there were cures to the construction work and cures to the site. The subsequent agreement that we'll talk about next is an indemnity agreement between the city and UP Fieldgate, which alleviates the city from any liability on that. But the school board very much wanted to make sure that there were cure issues as far as items that would be penalty items if the cures weren't met at the time that the project was under development. Actually, prior to that, before the VOTEC opens. I can go into some detail about this, but the agenda item basically outlines temporary parking needs to be in place and the time periods that parking would be in place. The city and UP Fieldgate will acquire the property as is, and we have 15 days to do an inspection. The school board did approve this agreement at their meeting on May 26, 2015. And I'm happy to answer, in between Randy and I and Larry, we can answer any questions you may have.
Great, thank you. Any questions for staff?
Yes, ma'am. Has the plan now been approved by FDOT?
Has FDOT signed off? Almost. Almost.
Just for the record, I don't like this agreement. I don't like the format of it. I don't like it, a lot of aspects about it. But if the only way to get that project done is to do this, you know, the developer is putting up about a $300,000
yes.
line of credit, and hopefully,
I mean,
$5,000 a day. I mean, against the city as the purchaser, there's
like
a lot of
space.
I kept sending emails out. The whole thing is unnecessary. It's all
unnecessary.
But the school board wouldn't budge. They would only convey to the city, and so the city is now agreeing to pay liquidated damages if we don't develop according to SREF, which is a code we don't build under, and we're basically relying upon the developer and his financial capability, and hopefully the liquidateds don't exceed the line of credit.
That was going to be my question to you, is if we don't have an approval yet from FDOT, I read the language in here about approvals,
yeah.
And I am hoping, and my question to you
but
is...
I'm sorry to go off.
But does a lack... No, the liquidated damages are incredible, and it appears to me that the liability is totally out of line, and the question is, are we fully indemnified? Are we safe with this, or are we... What if FDOT doesn't give us the approval when we need it? Because, you know, they didn't like this however many years ago it was that this idea came forward. This wasn't their choice. So what happens if they don't approve? That's what I'd like to know.
Approve the alignment as proposed?
Mm-hmm.
That would be up to the – then the developer is in a pretty sticky situation with regard to how they have access to the remaining part of the property.
But we're not going to take away their existing parking. Until we know there's approval.
So we're going to get approval from FDOT
before any of this happens.
Anybody spends any money.
Right.
See, because I doubt that. I mean, I hope so. I really hope so.
How can you doubt that?
Well, I think that UP is ready to go, aren't they? I mean, they're ready to go. The truth of the matter is, once we get out there, we're dependent upon the indemnification agreement that we have with him. And I just wanted to know where FDOT fits into that. I'm not trying to be difficult.
Well, Commissioner, I don't believe you're being difficult, but you said you doubt that. And I want to make it clear that I think we're all...
We can't control that. We can't control what the developer starts to do, and that's my...
Let me say it a different way.
Yes, certainly.
The obligation of the cure work is to provide them the other parking and replace that parking
access.
And so that in of itself is not dependent upon... The roadway being constructed. So
the access is, though, isn't it?
The access sure includes access points.
Yeah,
right.
and without
with, acres of that land.
Without, and I'm again. My concern is DOT.
Right.
And so. The access point is onto the proposed extension of Lee Road, and without DOT approving that extension. Then the school board does not have that access point.
Yes, I mean that would
and
be
which would be put us or somebody in the
it would put the developer in a
liquidated damage department.
Yes,
right.
And we have strict deadlines, and the city is the purchaser, and the city is primarily responsible. If everything goes right, it's no problem. There's a lot.
Larry, can you start from the beginning? Let's break down where your concerns are, because when the city attorney says he has very serious concerns,
I have very serious concerns.
I think we have very serious concerns.
I've been sending out email after email after email from the inception of this, and, you know.
To who?
Staff, school board, and, you know, and Katie, my associate, has put together the best deal she can if we're going to do this. Let me start with my concerns. My concerns are, number one, the school board is going to be on the hook for big, steep, liquidated damages under a strict time period that we can't necessarily control. Number two,
school board's on the hook.
No,
school board's going to assess liquidated. The city's going to be on the hook.
You said the school board is on the hook. So I
misspoke. The city, yeah, I'm not 100% here. The city is going to be potentially on the hook if you don't meet the deadlines. I've had concerns from the very beginning. All of this complicated morass is required because the school board takes the position that they have to bid every sale of land.
Right.
That the law, state law, changed 5 or 6 years ago, but their administrative rule still says they have to bid it.
Okay.
That means they have to appraise it, rather. They have to get an appraisal. I've been said, okay, you could waive your rule because state law has changed. You do not have to have an appraisal to sell land. School boards don't have to do that for at least 5 years. Assuming you have to appraise it, you could get an exception to the bidding and appraisal requirements of every sale because this is a sole source. No one else is going to pay this price for 2 acres, 2.something million, in this location and do all the construction work for you. No one's going to do that except the developer.
And so, if I recall, the option was FDOT run road kind of straight through the property, which was on their improvement plan for years.
Yeah, right? So I've sent out many emails, but you know that ship has sailed apparently. So if everything goes right, I do think that there, and I have a concern whether or not the school board, whether the city, your approval to enter into liquidated damages might be ultra-virus. I'm not even sure that the city.
Maybe what?
Ultra-virus, in excess of your authority.
Right.
In excess of your authority. I don't know that you can legally agree, and I said that, and everyone just churns along, and the school board churns along, and I'm not even sure the city can legally agree. I guess we can test that if they ever do try to assess liquidated. The other point is, at some point, you're lending your municipal aid and credit in support of a private corporation's development. That's a constitutional issue. One of my numerous emails, but I feel like I've been pushing rope up a hill on this. I just have a lot of concerns about this, but again, if it all goes well, no problem.
All right. Let me ask you, what's going to give you greater comfort? Waiting until the deal with the FDOT is struck? And is there anything pushing to make this happen before that deal is struck?
I defer to Dory. I haven't been in a door
working. Mr. Attorney, after that, I have nothing further to say regarding this because we received this from your office.
Yeah, yeah,
this was sent by your staff.
Yeah.
This is put on agenda at your at Katie's request, who works for you. So the fact that this comes out now and you raise these issues in front of the board,
yeah.
I believe that has created quite a morass for this commission to have to deal with.
It's a complicated deal. I know Katie has been dutifully working along trying to get this thing documented as best she can. That doesn't mean that I'm accepting it. Or you've seen I've sent multiple emails where I've voiced serious concerns with this.
Okay, guys, listen, excuse me. Let's stop this discussion here.
Yeah.
Larry, I asked a question.
Yeah. What I would like to see is that the deal be contingent upon FDOT giving approval and the developer has, one of my concerns is the work that the developer is going to do, the cure work as it's called, we don't even have plans developed. They're going to work on those building plans, and we're supposed to be on the hook as the buyer of the property. I'd like to see those building plans fully approved and developed, and the developer say, yes, I'll build according to those plans. And I'm sorry if that's upsetting as a matter of process. My fundamental obligation is to point out some serious concerns I've got with this agreement.
Well, then we will deal with those issues offline. I don't think that this is a forum for that. But I do believe that there are obviously some concerns between city staff and our legal representation. So let's see if we can, Dory, let's get back to the situation at hand and see how we can try to.
My apologies for my outburst. That was inappropriate, but just frustration over probably a lack of communication. What I would recommend at this point is allow us a two-week continuance to go back and talk to Larry about this. We'll talk to the UP Fieldgate folks, see what we can work out, and see if there's any way to come to some compromise that the city attorney feels comfortable with.
Would you be amenable to a tabling of this then for now, or
yes,
would you
sir.
Just like to pull it off the agenda?
I think we should table it.
Before we table, can I say one thing?
Yes, Commissioner.
I have dealt with lots of liquidated damages through Lockheed Martin, and I can tell you that this is not a game that we should play lightly. And I personally would like to see the removal of liquidated damages from this contract. And that's my position as a commissioner. However, it falls in here. I just want you to know that for me to agree to this contract, we either have to do nothing until we have the FDOT approval and the plans in place for whatever we're going to do, or we remove the liquidated damages.
I think all parties are operating in good faith with great relationships with the FDOT, UP, the school board, so I think we can make this thing happen, and I know it just may take a little bit more legwork. I'm going to move to table.
Mr. Mayor, are we...
I've heard my concerns repeatedly.
Are we...
Okay, Larry, let's talk about this.
Mr. Mayor, are we conversely also tabling item
F? Yes, sir.
F?
I would ask that as well.
I think we'll table. Thank you, Commissioner McMackin. I'm moving to table 11E and 11F.
Mr. Mayor, I have a question.
I'm sorry. Hold on, please.
I will second that.
The motion to table takes precedent. We have a second. Cindy, would you please call the roll?
Yes, sir. Commissioner Seidel?
Could you tell me where I'm running, please?
We're moving to table items 11E and F.
Okay. Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Commissioner Seidel, I apologize for cutting you off.
Yeah, no,
there's
okay.
A motion to table that takes precedent on the discussion. But if you'd like to comment, please do.
Yeah. No, what I'm hearing is the main issue is the fix for the school board once the damages have taken place. And that's really what everyone's concerned about. And just looking at this from an engineer's perspective, you know, for example, there's rows of parking that were taken out that looks like if we move the road over a few feet, we might not be taken out. So to me, it's whose business is it to do the design for the school board site that the school board's going to be happy with? And that's when you tell me it's the developer's business to do that, that kind of scares me. That is the school board's property. Why don't we pay their engineers if they're the ones that are going to do the fix? And then the prices can be based on that. I mean, it doesn't make sense for another entity to tell the school board what's in their best interest. And if it's the developer paying the school board's engineer to figure that out, and then we can all agree on the prices and everything, then why aren't we doing that? Why are we leaving this thing out there that no one's sure what it is, and they're trying to make us responsible as the responsible entity for it?
The way the road has been designed to date, the property that is encompassed in this agreement is the property that's necessary to design the road the way that the road has to fit. So the school board doesn't want to take care of its own. They don't want to handle the cure. They want the developer and the city to handle the cure.
But ultimately, they're going to approve it.
They have to approve the cure, yeah.
So we could be in an endless loop.
Hey, well, I think that's
the deadline.
Okay, thank you. I was just trying to understand the process. Thank you.
Great. This has been tabled. I apologize, sir. We've tabled the motion for now, and we will be moving on the agenda. Okay, we have item, Dory, I believe you're still up on 11G. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay,
do you need to take a few minutes? Take a few minutes.
No, I'm good. This is real simple. As we talked about with the golf course task force earlier today, under the city's charter, we can only have task forces alive for 6 months. So we know that we have planned on visioning for being a year. So this resolution would just extend that to August of 2016 to allow us to
make sure that we have appropriate time and the steering committee has time to get the work done.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Larry, will this be simply for the visioning, or will this be for all? No, I see it in the title.
Right, it's just for the visioning.
Okay, great. Is there any discussion on this?
No, sir.
Larry, do you need to read the resolution?
Yeah, but it's a resolution for the City Commission of the City of Rampart, Florida, extending the term of existence for the visioning steering committee, providing for conflict, severability, and effective date. Thank you.
Great. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there a further commission discussion on this item?
No,
now, would anybody from the public like to address the commission on the resolution to extend the term? Craig, we will close the floor to public comment. Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Yes, sir. Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes.
Thank you. On behalf of the Visioning Steering Committee, thank you.
Okay, we have before us. Sorry, folks.
11H.
Now, is this one going to be, are we expecting?
FDOT wanted a resolution to enter into a contract, so you've got a couple of those coming up.
Yeah, I saw those.
Which is an FDOT oddity.
They're all about lights on the Loma and Fairbanks.
Fairbanks. Great. Larry, would you please read this resolution?
Yes, sir. A resolution of the Commission of the City of Winter Park, Florida, for the approval of the joint participation agreement between the State of Florida, Department of Transportation, and City of Winter Park, FM 436862-1-58-01, providing for conflict severability and an effective date.
Fantastic. Who do we have? Do we have any comments for staff? Is this Terry? Come on up. You got to look out. Last time there was an electric utility guy there, he caught a lot of heat.
Yeah, so this is your big chance.
Okay, what we have before us is a joint participation agreement with Florida Department of Transportation. And this is kind of a good news. We were meeting with them on the Fairbanks project, and we said, oh, by the way, do you have some money for streetlights? And they said, oh, by the way, we do. So we were able to work the next agenda item is a similar JPA with FDOT for Loma Avenue. So we were able to get almost $300,000 for Fairbanks for the 46 lights on the south side of Fairbanks.
Yay.
You know we have them on the north side. We're just going to put the duplicate on the south side. And they're giving us $288,000 for that. Our portion is going to be $52,000.
I don't mind those odds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good news.
Yep.
Good news.
And if I could just add, the street needs legal lighting, so this is kind of doing that, isn't it? Isn't that why the DOT is somewhat into this? To make sure the street is lighted.
We're going
to
put the conduit in when we do the underground area of the distribution, but it was going to be our responsibility for the lighting on the south side as it was for the north side during the sewer project.
So, okay, no, this is great.
Great.
Yeah, and I'd like to commend Nikki Johnson. She worked hard on this. She was the one that asked the question, and so she should get the credit for it. So.
Great.
Good job.
Thank
you to
the DOT also.
Do you require a motion?
Yes,
I would move to approve.
I'll second. I'll celebrate.
Sorry.
I just wanted to ask a quick while he's up here. Is the next one that we're going to see, are these lights all going to be consistent?
Yes. Do you want me to talk about the Aloma project? Because it's the same thing.
Sure.
The Aloma project, when we did it originally a couple of years ago, was to install decorative lighting from Pennsylvania Avenue to Lakemont. Well, we had X amount of dollars and we had X amount of distance to go, and the photometrics meant that we had to leave a gap in the center between Shepherd Avenue and Cortland. And it's, I think, 16 lights. And so now what we're doing is we're going back and filling in what we call the gap.
Right.
The conduit's already there.
Terry, can I ask just a detailed question on these? What types of lighting is this?
This is going to be the Sternberg teardrop decorative pole, high-pressure sodium.
High-pressure sodium?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And is there any way to, I know the usage and the electric usage of those is, what would you call it, moderate compared to some of the other things that are out there today? But
well, the LED, and we're... Jerry and I and everybody in the utility, we're still studying the LED fixture. We're kind of on the sidelines at this point. The technology is changing. Yeah. The prices are continuing to drop.
Yeah.
And at some point, we're going to be bringing a proposal to you. We're looking at the connector streets that y'all asked us to look at and for LED lighting, panel and things. We'll be making a presentation at some point to you on that. I think eventually what we want to do is to go in the direction of LED, but I don't think we're ready to make that leap of faith at this point.
And when are these? When's the installation date? This is, if I recall correctly from reading through, and I forgive me for not remembering exactly, this is after the undergrounding is done. We're talking about doing all these.
On alone, Mayor, we're ready to go right now. We've already got we just have to order the lights once we get the JP approval. On the Fairbanks, we can't install the lights until both the transmission and the distribution have been undergrounding, but they've given us 5 years to do that.
Great. Thank you, Terry.
We just need to encumber the money.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Right. Well, let's do that.
Well, we have a motion. We have a second. We'll open the floor to public comment. Anybody want to address the commission? 11H. You step forward. And seeing none, we'll close the floor. Are you all ready to vote?
Yes, sir.
Cindy, please read the roll on 11H.
Commissioner Seidel.
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. And we have Larry, would you read 11I, please?
Yes. A resolution of the Commission of the City of Winter Park, Florida for the approval of the joint participation agreement between the State of Florida Department of Transportation and the City of Winter Park, FM number 436862-1-58-02. Providing for conflict severability and an effective date.
And safe to say this is identical to the previous one?
Yes.
Terry, are there any differences?
Hey, Terry?
Just the volume of the
okay.
There's fewer lights on this.
Great. I'll look for motion, Commissioner Sprinkle.
I'll move it. I'll second.
Now the SMS team over there. Great. Any discussion from the commission?
No, sir.
I will open the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission? No, we'll close the floor. Fantastic. Cindy, would you call the roll, please?
Yes.
What is this, 11?
Aye.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you, Cindy. 11J, Larry. Can we have a simultaneous public reading, please?
These are contracts only, and I think Mr. Warren will explain. These agreements don't require resolutions because...
we have a resolution with the JPA.
Yes, there is one on joint participation, only that one.
How do you want to handle this? Would you like to... Jerry,
he's got several contracts, but I can go ahead and read the title and take care of it.
So would you mind... Let's he just got back at us because he totally distracted us.
Oh, his light is blinking.
Yeah. For those at home that are listening, Jerry has a blinking light on his chest. Larry, would you please read the resolution?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
They do have one on the JPPA. A resolution of the Commission of the City of Winter Park, Florida for the approval of the Joint Participation Agreement between the State of Florida, Department of Transportation, the City of Winter Park, FN number 433-788-1-56-02, providing for conflict severability and an effective date.
Great. Thank you. Jerry?
I don't want this to be a distraction. After all the abuse that I've taken tonight, I'm sort of inclined to tell you that I think the agenda item is thorough and completely describes the situation. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Listen, I will tell you this. I am so happy this is in front of us. So please, go ahead.
I was kind of chuckling at the guy that said he was that close with an agreement with DOT. We've been that close for 2 years, and boy, it's a difficult deal to deal with. We have basically three agreements here. One agreement, well, let me back up just a second. The DOT, through a lot of effort, Dean Cannon, I think, Mayor, you were actually involved in those conversations with the DOT, and they came forward and they said, we're willing to fund up to, it was $12 million, but they spent $500,000 of it on the engineering. We got $11.5 million to place those 69,000-volt transmission lines along the south side of Fairbanks underground. And then, of course, there's underbuilt distribution that would have to go underground at the same time. And so the money's there, And we've been having discussions with Duke for 2 years and FDOT for 2 years about what we have to do to move that project forward. It became very clear in the course of our conversations with Duke that, first of all, they're not excited about the project. There's no value in the project to them. And so they are strictly doing this because the city of Winter Park would like it done. And so what we found as we discussed the distribution part, which is the lower lines that are underbuilt on the transmission line, that they really, you know, is going to deal with a lot of customer service kinds of issues, the same sorts of things that we're dealing with in our own undergrounding program. And they just threw up their hands and said, we don't do that. So I'm sitting in a meeting, you know, with a realization that that stands between us and making this deal happen. So I said, well, we're doing it every day, so let us do it for you. We will be your contractor. We will design the project. We will construct the project. We'll do it in accordance with your specifications. They finally agreed to that. So one of the agreements is essentially an agreement between the city of Winter Park and Duke where we're going to be their contractor. We're going to design the project, we're going to construct the project in accordance with their specs, consistent with their material specifications, and then at the end of the day, we're going to be reimbursed for everything we spend up to the $3.1 million, and then we're going to give it to Duke. I'll tell you that the design has been completed. They have reviewed our 100% design, and they gave us very few comments back, so they're in the process now of reviewing our design with 100% changes. I presume that it will come back positive. So one agreement, the first agreement, is that agreement between the city of Winter Park and Duke, where we're their contractor. The second agreement is the joint participation agreement, and that's the one that the resolution approves that Larry read the title to you on. I do not know why DOT thinks we need to have resolutions to execute an agreement, but they said they wanted one, so you have one. The third agreement is what I call the three-party agreement, and it is an agreement between Duke, FDOT, and the city of Winter Park. That agreement is mostly an agreement between Duke and FDOT. Actually, if you look, I think it's on the next to the last page, you'll see that it's referred to as a two-party agreement. It was drafted in the beginning as a two-party agreement. This is the reimbursement agreement between Duke and between the Department of Transportation. There are a couple of paragraphs in there that are important. And basically, the paragraph says that if Duke runs out of money in the $8.34 million, whatever the dollar amount is, on the transmission underground, then FDOT has the right to take leftover money out of the distribution part to pay for that, and if that's insufficient, then it would be our check. And that's the third agreement. I want to make clear, although I've seen Duke's estimate, and I believe that it has ample contingency built into it, and our estimate for the, we did the estimate for the distribution piece, and I will tell you that at the $1 million a mile, which is about what we're used to seeing, and throw in $700,000 for customer services, there's about 100 of them, and let me tell you, $7,000 a pop is a lot of money. That comes up to about $1.8 million. And so $3 million has got a lot of contingency in it. But the truth of the matter is, this $11.5 million of undergrounding transmission and undergrounding distribution, that's all the Department of Transportation has said they're willing to spend, is the $11.5 million. There are a lot of things in this agreement that I'm not wild about, but when I was sent in to negotiate this, I was under the impression this is a really important project for the city of Winter Park as relates to our economic development associated with West Fairbanks. I figured if somebody were going to offer me $12 million, even if it was going to cost $15 or $16, I would figure out somehow to come up with the extra $3 or $4 million, because you can't turn down that kind of money to do something that's so important to this city. So we do have a risk. I think it is a measured risk. I think there's sufficient contingency in both projects to be reasonably comfortable, but I can't promise you that. if we end up at the end of the day and either one of these projects or both of these projects exceed the $11.5 million, then I think the city of Winter Park would have no choice but to take the money that we would be spending on underground, delay the program, and use that to come up with the additional dollars for the project. So in a nutshell, that's what we have.
In a nutshell, we're giving $11.5 million to underground those wires, mm-hmm. and if there's overages above and beyond that, that's our nut.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you're comfortable with that?
Yes.
Great. Commissioner Sprinkle.
So if, in fact, everything, you know, the stars are aligned and everything came in under that, mm-hmm. will we still have access to any of that to go a little bit further?
I think the short answer is probably not, okay. but I think we would be in a position to ask some things. It's just like Terry Hotard was telling you when we asked the question about funds for street lighting, the answer was yes. So, you know, I think there are other things that we might like to do, and if money was left over, I think we would be in a position to ask.
Mr. Sedgwick?
Jerry, I'm assuming you've seen the plans that Duke put together, right?
Yes.
And so the specific begin point and end point, I guess, I'm trying to...
The beginning point is the first structure, transmission structure, and my take is it's already there, is just east of I-4 on Fairbanks. It's that big, new, ugly pole they put up.
Yeah, that's the big, new, ugly pole.
So that one stays, right?
That one stays. Okay. And so everything would be undergrounded all the way... I think the end point would be at the back corner of the bowling alley. It's on Harper Street.
It will cross 1792.
Yes, it will.
Okay.
And it'll turn the corner at the intersection of Harper and Fairbanks and go to the next structure, and I think that's at the corner.
Okay, and then they own up to the distribution station there?
Yes, they do.
Okay, and so that segment that's left, that would be theirs. Do you have any idea how much that would cost underground?
Well, I mean, if you wanted to take it's 6,000 feet, the project is, and if you want to take $8.3 million and 6,000 feet, you could probably come rationally close. I mean, it'd be less than $8.3 million, but it probably would be 5
Length
or 6.
Length-wise, it's not that, it's half the distance, a third of the
I'd say it's about half, yes, sir.
Okay, and that's what, you know, I just want people to be clear when we underground that there's some lines in the
yes,
city.
Yes, yes. Not only would that piece between, what street is that? Is that Comstock? It's right behind the bowling alley there?
Yes.
So that corner, from there all the way to the substation, would remain overhead. And as you probably know, that line also comes out of the substation on 1792, proceeds a bit north, and then goes behind the old Kmart Plaza, Bennett Road, and takes off towards Eatonville. All of that would remain overhead.
Okay. Now, this is still great. I'm just want everyone to understand that. Mm-hmm. It's not a panacea for all of them, but this is awesome.
Great. Commissioner McMahon.
Jerry, the agreement will be based on, or the construction will be based on the plans that we have prepared.
Oh, on the distribution piece.
On the distribution.
Yes, sir.
I mean, I've got two questions. First of all, my only concern with Duke is that halfway through this thing, they come in and say, hey, we're going to, you know, we need to upgrade this to whatever new standards there are.
They are going to upgrade the line, but they have already... We've already concluded that the upgrades are their cost.
And that's in, is that?
That's built in.
That's built into the agreement.
Right.
This agreement doesn't have a problem.
I want to make, because we're on the hook for anything that can.
We are on the hook.
So that
yes, sir.
Sure that it's a very small hook if it exists at all.
The
other one, you mentioned if additional funds are required. That's our nut to crack. And
yes, sir.
We can crack that from any fund we want to.
We could.
It doesn't necessarily have to be undergrounding.
No. Since it's not my facilities, I would say please don't take it from me. If you needed
anywhere out there, then I'm good.
I'm just aware. I know enough about the city's finances to know that you don't have a few extra million laying around. And if you needed a few extra million, given the choice of turning down the money from the DOT.
No, I'm saying,
I would say you take it from the underground program.
I just wanted to make sure the agreement wasn't written that way.
No, it's not. It is not.
It's still our option where we want to find.
Absolutely.
We just wouldn't have your retirement party, that's all.
That's right.
Commissioner Cooper?
No, I'm fine.
Thank you.
No, I talked to Jerry about this because, of course, the liability is always a concern, but I also agree that not to do this would be foolish. And my only question is there an opportunity to have an independent audit of the estimate so that we can at least be escrowing some reserve if we need to? And that's all. And from what I heard today, it sounds like you are the expert in the industry. So you're not going to retire before this happens, though, are you?
Yes, ma'am. September 30th.
Well, okay, so I wouldn't mind having
now that I have won the award for you, your best talker. It's time to make it well. Somebody likes
you.
You
are a good talker. And you're willing to bet your reputation on this estimate that it's, you don't
on the distribution
we, you don't
piece,
feel like we need to be escrowing more.
No, on the distribution piece, it is so much higher than what we would normally budget. I am confident about that.
Right.
You know, here's the problem. And the problem is not about budget. And the problem is not about Duke making a change in Midway. The problem is something happens in the middle of the project that nobody else expected. That's the problem.
Right.
There's a giant boulder down there, and it's 500 feet in diameter, and they have to drill. I mean, I don't know. You just don't know.
You don't know.
You don't know what you don't know, right? And I just wanted to let you know.
And you don't feel like we need to escrow reserve. That was my question.
No, I don't. And the idea of an independent audit, Duke hired an outside firm, and they paid them good money to, A, do a design, and, B, come up with an estimate. And so these are the guys that are designing the underground project for Duke, and usually they include 15 or 20% contingency, and they did. And so, you know, my reaction is that it's a comfortable estimate, and I can't guarantee it, but I will tell you that me, whoever your staff is, will be paying really close attention to the project as it moves forward, and if there are any, if it looks like glitches are coming, we'll be the first to come tell you.
Well,
thank you.
Folks, I would look for a motion or three. I can make those motions.
Well,
I'm going to straighten it out. I'd like to move the agreement between the City of Winter Park and Duke.
I'll second.
I'd like to move the resolution of the which is approving the JPA.
I'll second.
And I would like to move the three-party agreement between Duke, the FDOT, and the City of Winter Park related to the underground.
I'll move it.
Great. Thank you. Any further discussion on the commission level? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to public comment. Anyone wishing to comment on this? No, we'll close the floor. Are you guys ready to vote?
Yes, sir.
Great. Cindy, let's vote on the agreement between, read the roll on the agreement between the City of Winter Park, the Electric Utility, and Duke.
Okay. Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. And now would you read the roll on the resolution, please?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. And now would you read the resolution or the agreement, the three-party agreement, the roll, please?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jerry.
Very good.
And congratulations. I know that was a long 2 years, two and a half years, 3 years. Gosh, 3 years, probably. Well done.
Very welcome.
Yeah. $13 million, $11.5 million is unbelievable.
It's all gone good.
Commissioner Seidel, commission reports. Let's see you, sir.
Yeah, I really don't have much to say, Mr. Mayor, except I do, again, I appreciate how you've run these meetings. I appreciate it today. I thought things ran very well.
Thank you. Mr. Sprink?
So I want to clarify one thing for us tonight because I was a little confused. When we have something that comes in front of us and we're supposed to, that we need to move, are we supposed to move it before we discuss it, or do we discuss it? Because sometimes we discuss it and then do we move it. So give me a little clarification there, because I don't want to be moving too fast, which I tend to do. I realize that.
My understanding, or right. the option was that we would move it so that anybody taking part in public comment would know what motion they're talking to.
I think so. To Commissioner McMackin's point, I think we can move it any time prior to public comment. I think that's really.
It doesn't matter when.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think that was the only contingent I thought was that we moved it so that anybody from the public that wanted to talk on the item knew.
So just for us, it's probably better to bring it up, talk about it, then move it, and then let everybody else talk
sure.
about it.
Unless it's something that we're all fairly comfortable with.
I mean, we're all looking at the same. Yeah.
And I don't have anything else to add. I just wanted to make sure, because I know that I try to hurry things sometimes too much, and so I will try not to move things quite so fast.
That's okay. I think that's right.
Especially when we assume we're all in agreement. That's when it's really easy.
Listen, it's not going anywhere until we vote on it.
You know what? I don't even assume that, Carolyn, so it's not a big problem for me.
I do.
Commissioner Cooper.
Believer of the Central Florida Water Initiative. Thanks. Would like to know if we would like to have a briefing before the close of the comment period, the end of July. And it doesn't matter whether we have them address us or whether they address the Sustainability Board or we don't have them address us at all. There are lots of meetings throughout the Tri-County area that we can go to. And the question is, would we like them to come? They're willing to if we want them to.
I don't have a...
Yeah, personally, I'm somewhat involved with all that, and I do know what's going on. So for me personally, it doesn't...
Right.
But I almost think from a public perspective, is it, you know, for the public to be aware of it and have to come and talk about it.
And the question is, should they do it through the Sustainability Board in the way of a community forum as opposed to coming to the commission? That would be my question about that.
Well, we had the staff liaison here from Sustainability. Chris, would that be something that would be beneficial to you and your board?
Yeah, what is the date?
The end of the comment period is July 31st.
Yeah, we could probably line it up for our next.
Okay. I'll give Lynette your. That's perfect.
Great. Contact?
Yeah, I'll have her, I'll send it to you.
Great. Thank you.
Contact.
Anything else?
Florida League of Cities has a pension webinar, and I didn't write down the date. I can tell you what time it is.
I think it's in our emails.
Is it? Did you get those? Good. Okay. Then that's fine with me. And we did lose Martha Cotton just recently. And the Expressway Authority is going to give a presentation on June the 18th, if you're dying to hear them one more time. Florida League of Cities. That's it.
Thank you. Commissioner
McMack. Oh, I should say one thing. I want you to know that the discussion that I was trying to have today about the bypass treaty just about bypass and doesn't make sense. And I want you to know that that was not intended in any way to cause anyone any discomfort at all. But that was just for
I appreciate
thing.
That. Thank you.
Sorry.
Commissioner
McMack. Quick question. The track behind the wedding chapel, you old lay down the city parcel back there? That we've cleaned out and
right.
everything. Have we discussed what we're going to do with that now that it actually
looks good?
Well, actually, I drove by there after the farmer's market on Saturday morning, just drove back there. I just we had a lot of discussion beforehand, and things happened. It looks like they built out whatever they're going to build out, and now we have that track of grass there that I don't know if there's any plans to do.
The last time the commission discussed it, there was no concurrence on. There was two commissions, one using it for parking. There were two that wanted to sell it, and one that wanted to sit on it. So we had no direction. Be glad to bring it back up as a topic of discussion.
Put it out 90 days or something. It's not burning a hole in my pocket. But yeah. I looked at that and just said, hey, what.
You had the conversation earlier today about the Swoop property, which is one of the golf course people were talking about.
Right, sure. That's where I'd like to see something lovely on that golf course.
And we had only one bid on the Progress Point property, so the question is, do you want that to come to the commission? Do you want to be evaluated by economic development or any other board prior to it coming to the commission? And so.
I would love to have Edam's perspective on it. I mean, that's what most of those folks do for a profession.
We were hesitant to do that without y'all's authorization just because
the original proposal was just to send it right back to the commission, but we've got an EDAB meeting next week that we can easily send it out.
Is it time sensitive? Is the offer time sensitive?
No, it's not. We're meeting with the representative who put the bid in on Friday and sitting down with them, and then EDAB can respond to it next Tuesday, and we'll agenda it for June.
We got three to send it to EDAB. I'm one.
I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's send it to EDAB to get their perspective.
Well, I do have a question. Are we advertising these things everywhere we can? It's so hard to imagine that we only have one bid.
That's a great question.
Yeah, it is.
And it's something we're looking at on this particular case because
I was
surprised.
Yes, that's just unheard of.
We did a lot. We didn't put a for sale sign on the property. Maybe we should have done that. But
that might have been. I'm wondering if we shouldn't use a commercial real estate broker. Is there some reason why we don't do that?
I've had EDAB members actually talk to me about that, and so I'm sure that will be something they want to discuss as well. Just for the notice of disposal, because we weren't really selling it. We wanted was to bring you proposals and let you all select. So it wasn't really a per se price like the piece we have on Lee Road. It was more of options. We advertised it, we noticed it, we put it out in trade magazines, we had it online. We actually went out to some of the real estate, the more commercial real estate sites and put it out there. So disappointingly.
We had conversations with people.
Yeah.
Lots. I apologize for that one of an interruption, but EDAB will be happy to take a look at that.
Thank you, Dorian.
And then sometime we can talk about the lake yard when we get down there. Just one other thing. Had a wonderful coffee meeting with the mayor, and you guys don't have to be afraid. He's actually pretty nice when you sit down with him one-on-one. So, all we did, Steve, I thought we had a great conversation. So that was I appreciate that opportunity, and that's all I have.
I have a meeting with Commissioner Seidel tomorrow morning. I believe Michelle's going to try to reach out to you to schedule something and chat. So
yeah, that was actually fun. It was a good way to.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. I enjoyed it as well. I'm having a coffee talk this Friday, and Commissioner or Vice Mayor Sprinkle, thank you. Are you gonna shoot
I'm
over?
I'm gonna be there just to make sure you make it.
Are you going to coffee talk, or are you gonna jump over to the? I was conflicted.
Oh, do you need me to go somewhere else?
Well, the
state of the county.
Oh, I was gonna ask you that. So I had set it was at 9 o'clock. State counties. I'll go there.
So if you want to come to mine early and then
you're
7:30
there, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think I can make both, and I don't want to come in later on the mayor. So
okay, I'll do that one.
Great. Well, I think that was it was a very heated and interesting meeting. I appreciate all the discussion, and I appreciate the temperament. And thank you all for a great meeting, staff. Thank you once again. This meeting is adjourned.